Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Now, I don't have to tell you, good folks, what has been happening here in our beloved little town. Sheriff murdered. Crops burned. Stores looted, people stampeded, and cattle raped. Now the time has come to act, and act fast. I'm leaving.
Hey, you get back here, you pass. Can I say to Wender, there's no way that nobody's gonna leave this town. Hell, I was born here, and I was raised here, and dadgummit, I'm gonna die here. And no sidewinding, bushwhacking, hornswoggling, crocker crocker is gonna rattle my biscuit cutter.
Now, who can argue with that?
Rabbit!
I think we're all indebted to Gabby Johnson for clearly stating what needed to be said. I'm particularly glad that these lovely children are here today to hear that speech. Not only was it authentic frontier gibberish, it expressed a courage little seen in this day and age. What are we made of? Our fathers came across the prairie, fought Indians, fought drought, fought locusts, fought dicks. Remember when Richard Dix came in here and tried to take over this town? Well, we didn't give up then, and by gum, we're not going to give up now.
Rabbit.
Rabbit.
Olson Johnson is right. What kind of people are we anyhow? I say we stay and fight it out.
Rabbit.
Dr. Samuel Johnson's right about Olson Johnson's being right. And I'm not giving up my ice cream parlor that I built with these two hands for nothing or nobody.
Howard Johnson is right.
Thank you, man.
Reverend!
Well, if we're going to stay, I think it's a big mistake. We're going to need us a new sheriff. Now, who's it going to be?
Why don't we wire the governor to send us a sheriff? Why should we get our own men killed?
Howard Johnson is right. We'll wire the governor.
Reverend!
Then let us pray for the deliverance of our new sheriff. Will the congregation please rise? I shall now read from the books of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and Duck.
Hello, it is 29 minutes after the hour of 1, and this is the month of March of the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milkpacking district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. It is Thursday, and welcome to day 12. My friends, my companions, mi compadres, my fellow travelers on the road of yucks and laughs. It's Thursday, March 10th, 2011. Thank you for drawing near on this day, the 12th. It is is 503-505-6964 if you would like to engage with us in that fashion, in that manner, in that form, through that venue, via that avenue. It is 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. It is rick@rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be emailed as well. It is Don, D-A-W-N. You can email it if you'd like. It's Don, D-A-W-N, @rickemerson.com.
Send it an email.
That's its email address.
It's putting the lotion on its skin.
You know what we've never started the show with is that, it puts the lotion on its skin, it was against the hose.
Oh, we should.
All right, I'll find that. I might actually have that on me. I mean, not like in my pocket or anything, but I think I might actually have that in my one of my many files.
Okay, you could play it during a break later in the show. In
yes,
fact, if
we
you
should.
Have it,
because
that's the most delightful thing ever.
Anyway, thank you for joining us. If you'd like to message us via Skype as well, you can do that. It's a Rick Emerson Show is the email. I'm sorry, I got a thing in my eye just now, just as I was talking. Jerry's talking that it's like for no reason. I didn't touch my eye. I didn't do anything. I didn't breathe. I didn't move. But it was like 1 second my eye was fine, and the next minute I had like an eyelash in it.
Oh.
And so then it's like that, an eyelash is just to the left of paper cut in the list of things that you feel like you're not allowed to complain about because there's such a minuscule pain, and yet we all know that it just hurts like an MF-er.
Well, yeah, anytime you get anything in your eye, it feels like you've got like a whole tree branch under your eyelid.
Did I tell you about that time I got a tree branch in my eye?
No.
Okay. There was this time and there was a tree branch into my eye when I was a kid.
Oh, see, I'll bet that really felt like a tree branch in your eye.
Yeah, I guess, although I didn't really have a proper appreciation for it at the time. I was jumping at, when I was a child, I was, my mom would occasionally clean houses when I was a kid just for extra money. And so I would just get dragged around to, well, like the worst thing ever, because I was too young to really, like, I was too young for her to make me assist her with anything. So that was good. But I would get dragged around to all these houses where my mom would go and just sort of do like housekeeping and, you know, whatever. And, But when I was a kid, it was almost kind of cool because it was like an infinite variety of backyards that I could play in, you know, and so I could just go, you know, sort of, and everybody's house was sort of different and had a different layout in the back, and so it was always something new to sort of, you know, running, jumping, climbing trees, to whatever extent I did that when I was a small, spindly youth. And I just remember I had the clearest memory of being a kid and being in the backyard of somebody's house when my mom was inside, like, cleaning the kitchen or whatever. And I was up in a tree, and it was in the, I think it was in autumn or fall or whatever, but it was, you know, it was like the leaves were all off the tree, and everything was sort of, like, dry and hard and pokey and pointy. And fancying myself some sort of a rough-and-tumble paratrooper-type hero, which is exactly what you think of when you look at me. I leapt out of a tree, but because the tree I was leaping out of had all of these branches in it, and it was that thing where the branch was facing me, like, head on. I mean, as though you were looking down the barrel of a gun. But as such, I couldn't really see it, because, again, you're looking at it straight down, so you really are only seeing the very pointy end of it. And that's so small that I didn't notice. Anyway, leapt out of the tree, branch right into my eye.
Oh.
I mean, in like the actual jabby, pokey fashion of the part of the end, just right into my eye there. And there was it was that thing where I just like was like laid on the ground in excruciating pain for about 3 minutes. And I was convinced that I had actually just poked my eye clean out, that I had just shoved it way back into the back of my head and that it was just, you know, it was just gone. But that was actually overridden by the fact that I didn't want to go inside and tell my mother because I was afraid that she'd be cross at me. It was that thing of like, oh, she's going to yell at me for losing an eye. I can't go inside now. I guess I'll just have to go home. I'll have to get a bindle and go hop a tramp steamer. So, the end. Great story, Gordy. It's Rick Emerson Show. If you would like to message us via Skype, that is Rick Emerson Show, all one word. That's our username there. The text box on the website open as well, if that's your pleasure, if that's the thing, if that's what you're into, if that's what gives you thrills on this Thursday. Don Taylor, what headlines are you tracking for the good people of Portland and beyond today?
Oh, well, we have a story about computer cookies tracking everything that that you do and say and think and dream about on the internet.
Everything?
Every single thing.
That's no good.
We have a burglar who brought his daughter along on a job. And the actress who played the Snoop on The Wire was arrested in a DEA raid.
Felicia Pearson.
Sure. Is that her actual name?
Yeah, I guess that's not...
Yes, it is. Felicia Snoop Pearson.
It's that thing where they did that thing on The Wire with... Now, see, I hate to say that. I'm going to have to pre-read that story to make sure that there are no spoilers in it.
Oh, well, there are spoilers. I already read the story.
All right.
So I know what she did on the show.
Okay.
With the it starts the whole thing talking about her buying a nail gun and.
Well, there's that. That's not really a spoiler
oh, okay.
as such. That's just okay. You where are you at with The Wire? What is up with that?
I kind of got sidetracked on the wire because I started watching Breaking Bad.
I'm going to set you on fire.
There's only so many hours in the day, and there's so much television. I'm still in season two of The Wire.
I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed, Don. That's okay. Just know that your cultural currency is, I mean, your tote board is falling.
And
really.
Then there's things that I have to watch double sometimes because, this weekend, Patrick is now three behind on Justified. So he's going to insist on sitting down and watching Justified. So
you have to be there with him for that, though.
I kind of do because it's on my laptop, and my laptop has to be plugged into the TV. And
your TV is just decorative at this point, isn't it? The TV doesn't actually do anything.
It does. It plays things from the DVD player or from my laptop.
What is the point of? Okay.
I watch 99% of the TV on my laptop anyway, so it's.
What do you? Hold on a second.
I watch it on big TV.
All right. Why do you have a 55-inch television if 90% of the things you watch on a screen that is like the size of a legal pad and also on a broken-ass computer that only works like half the time?
Because
why do you own a 55-inch television if you could just be... In other words, you could just be running things out of the computer onto the TV.
That's what I just said.
But you were just saying you watch most of the things on the computer.
Well, what I meant is most of the things
the
are
computer.
Via the computer.
Okay,
yes.
So it's not that you don't just opt to watch it on the small little screen. Okay, well, that's what it sounded like. And
I watch a certain amount of crap while I'm working, like minimized in the corner on my laptop. But things that are important and that I want to see, you know, good, like Justified, for example, I plug the laptop into the giant free TV, and then I watch it all biggened.
For things that you want to see good.
things I want to look pretty.
Okay.
Be all big and pretty so I can see all the details. Yes.
So it functions as basically... It functions as some sort of a television, cum Reader's Digest large print edition.
It is a freaking large computer monitor.
You're one of those
is
people.
What it really is.
Do you have the point size at like 72 on all of your monitors as well? And just like when you everybody had their first Windows computer and the resolution of the screen was set at like 640x220 or something and everything was huge. All right. Well, in any event, so Felicia Pearson, she's the character on The Wire that many, many people have latched onto as being singularly unnerving, but I mean, the character that was not unlike anything you would ever seen on television before. I would say that I have certainly never seen a character that was as starkly and I think at times terrifyingly depicted as the character of Snoop Pearson. But they've done that thing of just naming the character after her. Right? That is, her name and the character's name are the same. And I don't know why they did that. That's just because they didn't do it with anybody else. But that's a little bit of a stylistic choice they made. She's the woman that actually, the guy who plays Omar, Michael K. Scott, he just actually saw her in a restaurant. She was like a busboy or something. And he told David Simon, he's like, you got it. He's like, yo, you got to come see this chick who's at the restaurant. She's a busboy. And Simon met her for like 5 minutes. It was like, do you want to be on a TV show? And she's just like, all right. And so that, but you got to watch it only because it's one of those things that we will talk about in depth. See, here's the thing. You don't even know the length of the conversations that we're going to end up having about The Wire. And so I just want to hurry up and get it underway. I just want to start it.
Right.
So anyway, I'm not going to oversell it. I'm just saying you got to watch it. You got to get away with that at some point because it's going to be some fine television you're missing out on. Well, in any event, we also got a Corpse Watch coming up today, Clown Watch coming up today, and Clue number 4 in the EH Vending Name That Snack Contest. By the way, we have this from John and Gresham emails, just a series of updates. The first one just says, fail. I think that was at me jumping out of a tree and nearly blinding myself as a youth. Then followed up by winning $835 now donated to the
Yay!
ENN team for the Sleep Country Foster Kids Pajama Bowl, which is coming up this Sunday. That is $835. I don't know where that puts us... relative to the Geek in the City team being fronted by Mr. Aaron Duran, but I'm suspecting that we are in the lead, probably not as far in the lead as we might have ideally been by this point. But that's of course just because you know it's a big world, people got a lot of things going on, and And of course, Aaron is driven by the sure and terrible and certain knowledge that he will end up losing to us. And so that's a fearsome and powerful prod that works to motivate one. So we will give you updates on that as it progresses. If you want to find out more about that, you can go to RickEmersonShow.com. That is RickEmersonShow.com, and that is happening this Sunday, March 13th, Big Al's location in Beaverton. The Sleep Country Foster Kids Pajama Bowl. That'll be happening this Sunday, not at our typical Vancouver location, but in Beaverton, happening around 11 a.m.
Do you know what you'll be wearing for pajamas this year?
I don't, because I don't, you know, I don't, that's not a thing that I don't buy those myself. That is a thing that is usually purchased. Didn't you buy the pajamas last year?
No.
Who purchased the horrifying frog Cupid pajamas last year?
I have no idea. I thought you just got those at like a Target or something, didn't you?
I don't believe that I purchased them myself.
I thought you bought them yourself. I thought you like ran into Target like on the way there or something, and you went, "What's the ugliest things they got? Frogs and Cupids."
Well, now I don't know. I think I may have done that 2 years ago. No, because 2 years ago is when I ended up going to... 2 years ago is when I didn't make it. I was in Vegas. And so I had to do the makeup lunch at Henry's, where Sarah dressed me in her teddy bear pajamas. She had these, like, teddy bear/kiss pajamas that I wore. Well, I don't know. In any event, so that is coming up this Sunday, March 13th, at the Big Oz location in Beaverton. So we would love to... to see you there. Let's see. What else can we? You did watch Justified last night, yes?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so we'll talk about that later on today. We'll do the recap of last night's episode of Justified, and then where are you in the Breaking Bad? In the Breaking Bad arc, because they are three seasons into the show now.
Yeah,
we're waiting on season number four.
I'm closing in on the end of season two.
Okay.
So yeah, I should be done with season two. Probably soon, like by the end of the weekend.
What is the last thing? Are you still with the? Are you still at the point where they're?
They just had
blew up what's his name's head on the turtle.
Yeah, we already had that. I just had the episode where they drove out into the desert and Jesse, I guess, left the keys in the ignition and the battery died.
Did you finish that episode?
Yes.
God damn, what a nerve-wracking episode that was, where they're just stuck in that Winnebago all day in the sun. And then they only get out of it because of Walter's, like, he gets his professor on.
Yeah.
Give me some coconut shells.
And he gets totally MacGyver and just goes, wait, we have all of these chemicals and things. We can... You know,
which
we
is
can
the sort of
a
thing
battery.
That, like, you would normally call BS on, but you don't with that character because you just sense that he just would know how to do all that stuff. But there was that section where there was that moment where he was, I think he was quite literally coughing up sections of his own lung.
Yeah.
I mean, there was part of his like larynx just was coming out his nose or something as he was coughing. I mean, it is just a draining program to watch. The thing about Breaking Bad is that it's good, and it's beyond good. It's at times one of the best things on television, if not the best thing on television. But it's exhausting, where you will get to the end of certain episodes, and it's like the layers and layers of subterfuge, and it is not unlike The Shield in that way, where every character has got like 17 different plates that they got to spin because they're trying to like, because they got like 9 different secret lives that they're working at the same time, and it's like at the end, you just wonder how Vic Mackey's going to keep it all together, and so it is with Walter White, where he's just keeping all of these parallel tracks of his existence together with like Kleenex and bailing wire, and just barely.
Well, and then he has the whole parallel storyline with his brother-in-law, the DEA agent, who, when we first see him, just seems like in the very beginning of the first season, just seems like a big, big dumb blowhard of a cop. And he and a threat,
right,
you know, to Walter, like, ooh, we could get found out at any moment. And his character has just gone in these just odd directions where, you know, he's having like some kind of PTSD after shooting a guy. And then he gets a promotion he doesn't actually deserve into a job he can't actually handle. And then, the exploding tortoise. And then they go, oh, yeah, you were the guy who lived because you were over throwing up when the bomb went off. Go back to your old job.
Here's the thing. The other thing about Breaking Bad is, and you just sort of underscore this, is that they do avoid making anybody too much of an archetype. So he isn't the dumb cop. Walter White isn't just the hero. Jesse isn't just the dumb kid. His wife, who could just be like a Harridan, you know, and probably would be on a network version of this show, could just be a shrew.
Yeah, because her main role is to be the one who keeps going, where are you going all the time?
She's the antagonist. Well, yeah.
Why do you have to tell me your secrets?
She's sort of the unwitting antagonist. But at the same time, like, they don't paint her as just a one-dimensional, you know, it's just a one-dimensional, you know, kind of skag, which they really could have. Plus, I find that actress sort of strangely hot. Every now and again, here's the thing, though. Every now and again, when I look at her, she looks like she's a guy in drag. Just like one out of every 10 times.
I do like the way they've written her relationship with Walter, though, because, you know, might be a little TMI. When Patrick and I first got together, he'd been a single guy for a long, long time, like his entire life. He had never even been in a long-term relationship, much less married. And this was like my second marriage, and I'd been in some relationships before. I've been down this road before. And we had to have a lot of conversations about what it's okay to keep private and what it's okay to keep secret and what you should and why you should actually tell the truth about stuff.
Right.
And even just things like, you know, did you take the videos back to the video store? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're in the trunk.
A week later, I get a call from the video store because he didn't take them back to the video store, but he figured he'd just lie to me and say he did and then do it tomorrow, and I'd never know the difference.
That never works out.
And then that never happened. So we had a lot of conversations, much like Walter and his wife, that were these things of just going, so tell me about this. And then the guy says, what? Fill in innocent sounding story here. And me being her going, really? That's what you're going with?
That's,
really?
Of all of the possible cover stories, you're choosing that one.
You're like, what? Why don't you believe me? Really?
Yeah.
You think I'm that stupid?
Yeah.
Really? Okay, great. I'm going for a drive.
It's not
what? Why are you leaving?
It's not that they think you're that stupid as such. It's just that the guys always assume that you are no smarter than they are. That's the thing. It's not like they think, well, she's a lady. She's got a tiny brain. It's just that guys aren't that bright, and they just assume. They just view everything through the prism of their own. It's the same reason that guys send you a picture of their penis. Because it's like, well, I like to look at stuff. I bet they do, too. Here's my penis. Look at that. And it's, you know, they just don't realize that anybody, that there might be people who are slightly different than they are. So they think, well, I'm not that bright. Therefore, no one is that bright. Therefore, she will believe an idiotic story because I would believe an idiotic story.
Also kind of like the Republicans do. If I just keep saying it,
just
eventually
it
will be true.
Yeah, if you just stick to the story, you just never change it.
Because then if I have to admit that I was lying, now I'm in trouble for doing the thing that I did.
Right.
And I'm in trouble for lying. So I'll just keep lying.
And it's a double punishment. Yeah. So you don't have that. But she also in the later episodes of the second season and in the third season especially, I don't want to say she comes into her own because that implies that she hasn't already, but it's just that they unfold her character in ways that you don't anticipate and that you don't expect, and that they do subvert your expectations without resorting to just sort of a contrarian kind of script writing. So don't get me wrong, as much as I want you to be watching The Wire, the Breaking Bad is really just an exceptional show. So that is fine. I am going to be watching the first couple episodes of Shameless sometime over the next, I don't know, sometime when I get all that free time that's coming my way at some point in the indeterminate future that never actually seems to arrive.
Yeah, I don't know how we'll have conversations about how we're, because apparently we are both way behind the curve on this. I think there have been 8 episodes aired of this at this point. And I have watched the first one. And I'll be watching like probably 2 and 3 over the weekend if I can, you know, fit it in around all of The Wire and Breaking Bad and everything else that I have to. Plus, you know, things that I guess there are some things I should do this weekend that are non-television related.
Probably, such as raising money for the children.
Yes. Dawn. Oh, yeah, that's right. We do. We will be at the Sleep Country thing. I'll have to tear myself away from the giant TV long enough to go bowling.
You could just bring your iPhone with you and just watch things there.
I could.
Listener Jenny, by the way, would like us to know our Pajamable team, that is the Rick Emerson Show, the Emerson News Network Pajamable team, we have moved up to 3rd in the overall ranking.
Woo!
Aaron is, however, only $200 behind us. Which means that there is a chance that he will rescue the shards of his self-esteem. Mm. So we have to make sure that we stop that from happening.
Okay.
We have to prevent that. Under no circumstances can he be allowed to feel good about himself or his team's ability to raise money for children. We have to extinguish every spark of hope and life and vitality from their eyes.
How sad is that, though, for the like the big organizations and the... Because we did this, you know, last year. And
I think
you weren't
them.
Even on the air.
We've
and you made more money
year.
than, like... radio stations.
Yeah.
That were running actual ads and promotions.
Radio stations don't really seem to have the making money thing down all that well recently. That seems to be a skill. That's a merit badge that has been taken away from them. That is no longer in their skill set, as they say. Speaking of radio and radio stations, I should just... And if I seem a little bit loopy or... today or whatever, anything like that.
Well, it is Thursday.
It is Thursday, so, and I never could get the hang of Thursday, so it is just, we're just going to have to roll that as it rolls. You actually asked me something before we went on the air today with Legion of News. You said, hey, you're going to be gone next week, so what's up with that? By which I think you meant, what are we going to be airing next week where this, the Rick Emerson Show, might ideally be? And I said, I don't know. I guess we'll find out. Now, you are going to be, are you going to be doing Legion of News with a series of exciting co-anchors?
That I am. I have two nailed down so far, but I have feelers out to a few more. So, yes, I will have a number of people. I know for a fact.
When you say feelers, is this like names you've written down in a notebook but you forgot to do anything with?
No. I'm waiting for email confirmation back.
All right.
I know for a fact of those 5 days that on Tuesday I will be joined by Fatboy Roberts and we will be doing the news. And on Friday I will be joined by Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week.
Fantastic. And so we'll have more details on that. But so next week, so I'm going to be gone next week, which is the 14th through the 18th. So I mean, I'll be leaving like, I don't know, sometime like late Monday morning, that I'm getting back like sometime Friday afternoon or whatever. But it's just that thing. So I just don't know how that affects like being able to call in or whatever. But so for the totality of next week, I will be either gone or traveling. And so you're going to be doing Legion of News with a series of rotating coat chucklers. And then for this show, I don't know, we're have to figure out some fantastic scheme within the next 4 days. So there's any number of sort of options and possibilities that we could do. It's just a question of figuring out exactly what we're going to do, because we've talked about...
Maybe we could get a Rick Emerson impersonator.
Well, it's not like we haven't been... There was a guy who came to one of our listener parties as me one time, just speaking of that, and that's an unnerving thing. And it's weird that you bring it up, because I was actually just the other day, I was backing up a lot of my old... I had a bunch of CD-ROMs and like old sort of... external drives, but that weren't all that large. I mean, relatively speaking now. You know, it was like, look at this drive. It holds 55 megabytes of information. So I was consolidating a bunch of my old external drives and flash drives and stuff onto this 2 terabyte drive that I have at home, just so it's all in one place. So it can then be stolen when somebody burgles my house. But I was consolidating all of these show files and everything and just looking through it, largely because I knew I was going to be gone next week. And so I was looking through some of the best ofs and all of the archived programs and whatever. And I saw the photos from one of our listener parties that we had in goddamn La Center, went back when that seemed like a good idea. And there was a guy who actually, I don't even think it was for Halloween, I think it was just like for grins, he just showed up as me. And then he just spent a lot of the evening staring at me from across the room, and it was just so weird. It was so bizarre. It was like I would look over and there was a guy across the room. Imagine like if you were just at a party, even if it was like, you know, a Don Taylor show party. You're just like at a party, and like without warning, for no reason, there's just a guy who, you know, or a woman who looks exactly like you, across the room, just kind of going and just staring at you and making eye contact. I mean, it weirds you out over the course of an hour or two.
Without the staring or the eye contact thing, that actually did happen to me once. I was at a club back in my punk rock girl days, and I was at a club and I was talking to some friends, and I saw sitting at a table like way over on the other side of the club, there was a girl, and I was looking at her and I was going, I swear to God, that girl looks exactly like me. And then I thought, well, maybe my perception of myself is poor. So I don't know. So I turned to my friends and I was like, okay, there's this girl sitting over there at the table. Okay, am I wrong that she looks exactly like me? And they all looked over and they're like, holy shit, she looked exactly like you. And they're going, you should go over and meet her.
Just weird her out.
And I said, no, because I was just sure something bad would happen. If we actually spoke,
the universe would reduce down to a subatomic singularity.
If we touched each other, we'd both explode or something. I have no idea. And then I was like, they were trying to convince me to do it. And I finally said, okay, maybe I will go over there just to get a closer look. And I turned and she was just gone. She had just left. She'd gone.
That's weird. Maybe she was your Patronus and you just sort of projected her.
Maybe.
All right.
But I always wondered, I wondered if maybe she looked over and she saw me and she got freaked out and that's why she left. Like, she looks like me. And she just ran away.
Hey, because we haven't, because I haven't done this in a while. Hey, Don Taylor.
Yeah?
Your mama's so ugly. My Patronus, a paper bag. Okay.
Okay, there we go.
All right. Anyway, so I'm going to be gone next week, so Don's going to be doing Legion of News, and then we toyed with several possibilities. One is, you know, we just put the best of, which is, you know, just look through the archives and just, you know, find a bunch of, I don't want to say just find a bunch of crap, but I mean, just find just things from different eras of the show and put them all together and then, you know, play those. We had talked about having sort of a hosted best of where there's, you know, things from the past. Where you know, someone like you as maybe Peter Graves on you know, on A&E, you come on between segments and you say, or you as like or you as James Mason, you come on and you say, well, it was just 3 years ago that Nikki Sixx was, you know, that we talked about you doing sort of having a guest host for the show itself, or some combination of all the above.
We talked about doing some interviews just for this and some things, and you know. But all of those things seemed like so much work that I think we just immediately discarded them because we're really lazy.
It was just one of the, well, the one idea that we did have, now we're just listing things that people aren't going to be able to hear.
Right.
See, now we're just
listing. That would have been great, they think. Oh, and that would have been fun, too.
Here's some stuff that you're going to be denied next week. Here's things that you won't be able to hear, no matter how great they may sound right now in the describing portion of the show. Well, we had said that, you know, each day when we had a guest on, like Ryan White or somebody, said, well, we'll do the regular show, and then we'll just do like another 20 minutes afterward with, you know, but with not streaming it. So then we've got like 20 minutes in the can each day. But of course, that requires like a sort of self-control that we just don't have. Not that we don't end up doing like 20 minutes longer on everything than we expect. We do. We just don't really have the self-control to end the show first and then just to tape it. So, you know, in any event. So so we got like 4 days to figure out a solution to that. So we'll, the other thing about it is because I got the iPhone with me, and that has, you know, it has the Skype and whatnot. So there is also the possibility that I can be Skyping in to the show, either to Legion of News or to this part of the day at some point, you know, either the part of the week or the part of every day or, you know, some of the days or whatever. And I can be doing that creepy, like I'm in the same room with you thing, even though I could just be lounging in Central Park somewhere.
That's true.
So I could be strolling arm in arm, you know, down 42nd with, you know, with a bevy of chorus girls drinking champagne from their slippers while still engaging in witty banter with you via Skype.
Yeah, you could be shivering in your substandard hotel room.
I could be bleeding to death in an alley, Don, having had my lungs perforated by a wayward youth who was looking for money for goofballs.
You could call in between typing in comments to Expedia saying, OMG, never stay in this hotel.
Seriously. Now, here's the thing. And it's like, I love my wife. I really do. But I'm taking like $300 in my shoe just so I can get, just so if push comes to absolute shove, if I just walk in, because I just know it's going to be one of those places where I walk in and there's going to be a puddle of steaming blood in the lobby. And that's going to set the tone for the entire evening. I'm going to have to step
over
a corpse.
It'll be blood if you're lucky.
It's just going to be like that thing where I'm just going to end up in that, like, Elwood Blues, you know. You got my cheese whiz, boy? And I'm going to go off, and it's just going to be me and a hot plate, you know, and a cockroach the size of Joe Pesci staring at me.
That's why I have to share a bed with some toothless bum.
That'll be great.
Just like in the Old West.
The thing about it is that, you know, never mind. Anyway, so I'm just the one. I was going to say the one great thing about my wife, but that makes it sound like there's only one great thing. There isn't. One of the many, many great things about my wife is that while it has taken me many, many years to repair and rebuild my credit history, because like a lot of people who work in you know, in radio or in the entertainment industry, I just had no money for the longest time and no financial sense for the longest time, and so as a result, I had just like blackened, cinderous husks of credit where other people normally have a credit score. It was like an inverse credit score. And it took me a long time to climb out of that hole. My wife has always had perfect credit because she actually, you know, she had parents who were smart and who actually, not that my parents
aren't
smart.
And yet she married you anyway.
That's the thing, is it's like, but it's almost like God sent her to me, you know, because you know that there were just certain things I was never going to be able to learn on my own. It was, she just appeared like a blinding light on the road to Damascus. You know, and so my parents just never put a priority or, you know, any sort of importance on learning about money or whatever, and her parents did. So she has had stellar credit, like, since the day she was born. Like, she came out of the womb with a black card. And so that is the one thing I got going for me in New York, is that at any moment, if it does look like I'm in fear for my life, I can just sort of, you know, I can use the words platinum card just to sort of, you know, and then I click my heels together and it'll teleport me to someplace better. So, hey, by the way, speaking of platinum, arrived yesterday?
No.
What arrived yesterday is my ticket to Book of Mormon the musical.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
I know. And
I'm so very jealous.
And I know this is like what, it's not even Catholic guilt or liberal guilt. It's just a stupid guilt. I actually toyed with whether or not to even mention it because I don't want to be like rubbing it in. But on the other hand, it's like, how can I not, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying to be like, look at this cool thing I get to do that you don't get to. I am
jealous and yet at the same time happy for you.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, how can I mean, I can't, because yeah. I had actually toyed with not going because Laura wasn't going to go to New York because it's going to be just me. You know,
gotta go.
Well, that was the thing, is like, that's how stupid my brain is. That's how I'm wired up, is that like, I was going to go to New York and my whole thing was going to be to not have any fun at all and to never do anything enjoyable and to make sure that the entire thing was excruciating and just exhausting and that there was no pleasure derived.
Work, work, work.
Because I felt all bad that she's not going and so therefore I'm not allowed to have a good time. And I was like, that's right that I stay in this Dante's Ninth Circle Hotel. I don't deserve anything. And she said, well, are you going to go to the Book of Mormon? I'm like, no, I can't go to the Book of Mormon without you. I'm just going to sit in my room and rub off my skin with a cheese grater. And she said, well, you can't. She said exactly the same thing. She said, well, you can't not go.
Yeah.
And so she did everything but just, like, drag me over to the phone and stick me, on with, like, the operator at BroadwayTickets.com or whatever. So anyway, so my ticket to the Book of Mormon, which, and the thing about it is like, it hasn't even actually opened yet. It doesn't open until, I think, the 24th. It's still like in previewing mode. I am not going to be seeing the Spider-Man Turn on the Dark thing because they sacked what's her name?
Yeah.
Is it Julie Tramer or whatever
Tamer,
her name is?
Yeah.
Tamer. So they
and also just like we've talked about, you know, yes, afterwards you would be able to say, "Yep, I saw that horrible train wreck." But the reality of it is you're life is too short to be spending that kind of money for something that you are not going to enjoy.
Well, Jesus, I mean, you know, the cheapest ticket for that is $75, and that's before your service charge and your convenience charge and your whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, depending on when the showing is, like, I may or may not take the subway, so which means I may or may not take a cab. And it's just like the cost to do all of that stuff. It's like for $100, basically. It would be like paying $150 to see like a really exotic, like restored print of The Room or something, and not even that, because they're rewriting it. They fired her. Bono and The Edge have come in to rewrite the score or part of the score. So I would now not even be able to see the version of the thing that is so notorious. If you haven't seen it by now, you're out of luck because they've changed everything.
Yeah.
So.
And it's just I've reached the point where I can't even go see bad movies for, like, you know, camp value.
Right.
I really can't.
Life is just too short.
Yeah, really.
Unless something is really just, I mean, unless it is like your Mega Shark versus, you know, Octolapod or whatever that is.
I honestly realized I had reached that impasse a couple of years ago when Patrick insisted we go see the Joel Schumacher Phantom of the Opera. Because there was an advanced screening of it, and I had a press invite, and so we didn't have to pay for it. And I was like, "But it's going to be terrible."
Right.
And he goes, "Yeah, but I want to go see just how terrible." And I'm like, "Really?
Yeah,
really?"
Yeah.
And so we did. And then at like the halfway, it's 3 hours long, and I made it about 90 minutes. And I leaned over and I said, "Do we have to stay for the whole thing?" And he was like, no, we really don't. I was like, good. And then we just ran away.
See, and
but I realized, no.
That's my thing, is it's like, that's 3 hours you could be doing with something better. And
yeah.
Also, and I had to, and the other thing about it is I had to admit this to myself, that if I saw the stupid Spider-Man thing on Broadway, I mean, I would just be, this sounds so retarded, but you know what I mean when I say this, I would just be seeing it to impress people. Like,
yeah.
It's not even a thing I want to watch. In other words, if you were to tell me that I was going to go see it, but I was forbidden to tell anybody that I had, any desire to see it would just evaporate. Like, I would really just be seeing it in some sort of alternate universe Freaky Friday kind of way to look cool. So I could go like, I saw the Spider-Man thing in New York, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just don't care that much. And it's also not going to impress anybody for more than like a day and a half. And then it's just going to be a thing people, you know. Whereas the Book of Mormon, I actually want to see. So.
I don't understand this. It's the whole bread and circuses thing. I really don't understand the thing of people. And it started with Phantom of the Opera on Broadway. The thing of paying more and more money for tickets to live theater because there's more and more spectacle.
Right.
And like we had talked about, you know, you go see like Kiss and they put on like an amazing show. It's like, okay, well, you're seeing Kiss. But if you're going to see a Broadway play just simply because, you know, there's a guy in a Spider-Man suit like flying around over your head, you know, spend half that money, that amount of money, and go, minus the airfare, and see Cirque du Soleil when they come to your town.
Or just see an actual play with, like, a story and dialogue.
Yeah, I mean, are you going because, you know, you like theater? Or are you going because you want to see things blow up and guys flying around over your head?
Really? And there's a theater like, well, first of all, it's Portland. So no matter where you are, there's a theater a block and a half from you. It doesn't matter. I mean, there's, all right. Well, anyway, so I got
Trek in the Park was free.
I was going to say that. And that's where the entire production design budget was like $5, and it's awesome. So I got my ticket to Book of Mormon the musical. So I'm seeing that on the Ides of March. I'm seeing that on March 15th, next Tuesday. So 8 p.m. So 5 p.m. Eastern. 5 p.m. Pacific time. It starts. It starts at 8 p.m. Eastern time. So I'll be seeing that 5 o'clock next Tuesday. So I'll be twittering like a madman from there. So I got that.
I'll see it like 4 years from now. When the road company comes through, starring Tom Wopat. Damn it, you beat me to it.
Gary Sandy as the missionary. I've tried to remain spoiler free about it. I mean, I don't know anything about it except that it's Matt and Trey from South Park, and that it's it bears some sort of passing resemblance to that All About Mormons episode of South Park, and I don't know if any of the little musical, the sort of mini musical numbers appear, you know, in the stage play, but I'm trying to remain sort of just completely blank about it.
Yeah.
I've read some of the reviews, though, and the reviews, I mean, unsurprisingly, have been like 100% positive.
I read something about like how they turned it into a play, basically, with it being from the point of view of a missionary and bringing you
right
into the story of Mormon. And it sounds just unsurprisingly brilliantly done, because Trey Parker is just some kind of a genius when it comes to, you know, he's like some kind of an idiot savant where musical theater is concerned.
Well, I think the thing about Trey Parker is that, like, he is... The thing is, he's a guy who just really, really, really honestly loves music and musical theater specifically, and huge, like, sort of Broadway style musical theater at that.
But he also has that creepy idiot savant ear for it, so that he can do it himself.
He's got that, and it's like, you know, and it's not like there aren't guys like that, but what there aren't, it's, you know, there have been your Stephen Sondheims and your whoever over the years, you know, and your Leonard Bernsteins, and but so there's been a lot of those guys. The thing about it is that he is that guy, but he's also just some version of that guy that got dropped on his head when he was a kid.
Yes.
Like, he's just, you know, or he just grew up in exactly the wrong or right town, depending on how you look at it. And, you know, so every now and again you get a guy that has just a freakish ability for something, but also it comes just packaged with some sort of unbelievably warped comedic sensibility. So I'm looking forward to that.
By the way, this has little to do with anything other than the fact that I was just thinking about Tom Wopat. Ben Jones, who played Cooter, he has a website. It's a place called CootersPlace.com. And he sells stuff.
Yeah.
He apparently has there's a Hazard County Museum.
Yes.
And if you go to Cooter's Place online, they have, like, T-shirts, and he sells you autographs and die-cast cars.
It will not surprise you to know that I interviewed him to note the launch of Cooter's Place.
I remember that because it was one of the first couple of times that I was on your show, and I was sitting in the green room, and you were like, here, we're running really late. Here, entertain yourself with this, and you handed me Cooter's book. And so I was thumbing through it, and then when I came in on the air, that was one of the first things I talked about. I was like, yes, apparently you thought I should. You were like, I'm really sorry we're running late. You've been sitting out there in the green room for like a half an hour. And I'm like, well, that's okay. You gave me a book written by Cooter to read.
You know, that's one of those things where it's like, that is America in a nutshell, though. He must have realized at some point that the producers of the show, or that CBS or whoever, they just let that. Nobody bothered to trademark any of that, or they let it lapse, and it was just sitting there waiting to make money. And I mean... because if you think about that guy, if you think Dukes of Hazzard was on for, what, like 5-6 years or something? I don't even know if he was on the entire run. But if you can take like a 5 or 6 year run on a television show and turn that into a tap that pours money for the rest of your life, yeah. God bless you. That's what makes this country great. I mean, really, that is what sets us apart from the lower nations and peoples of the world, Don. Anyway, so next week I'm going to be gone. We'll figure out sort of in the next day or two how we're going to handle that. But I'll be doing updates, and I'll be posting stuff on Twitter and crap and, you know, all of that. So
Twitter and crap.
Twitter and crap. just like Chico and the Man, but not, you know, not exactly. And whatever. So if I sound a little bit, ragged or drawn or whatever, it's not only a Thursday, but it's just one of those things where I've got, I don't know. It's just like I got like 9 jillion things in my Covey, my Franklin Covey planner. Yeah. And
well, I asked you about something as soon as you walked in the door today, and you looked at me with these tiny, tired little slits of eyes, and you were like, that's on my list of things to do.
And you know, and like a lot of people who make lists of things, and largely because I did take the Franklin Planner seminar like years ago when they offered it, that I have this whole elaborate system of ranking things in terms of priority. What needs to be done now, what needs to be done eventually, what can be done whenever. And the thing about it is you rank everything A, B, C, and then within A, B, and C, you rank them one through whatever. So it's like A's are things for today, B's are things for this week, C is things like whenever. And then for today, it's like A1, A2, A3. And so the last, like, I don't know, just like the last however many weeks, if not months, it just seems like every day I open my planner and there's like 17 things that I'll say A1. And then I just kind of go, ugh. And then I just close it again and I just sit there and I just look down at my shoes and weep silently to myself. So, did Lara marry you on a dare? Thank you. Thanks so much. I appreciate that.
Someday I would really like to hear the story, though, of the two of you meeting and the beginnings of your... I've heard the first date story about taking her to the movie...
In the company
and
of men.
And then going and having nachos. But I've never really heard the story about, like, how you met and how you came to ask her out and that sort of thing. And I'd like to hear that someday because I do... Like many people, I look at the two of you and I think, you know, God bless her.
You look at the two of us. You look at both of us and you think, God bless her.
Yeah.
I look at Rick and Lara and I think, Lara's great.
Like, I look at the two of you and I think, wow, you know, because you're, I mean, and I feel the same way about myself with my lovely husband. But there's like, we're, you know, we've talked about this. You look at your spouse and you just go, how the hell did I ever manage that?
How foolish they are to have been hornswoggled by me these many years. No, I'm with you on that. Well, especially considering that it's not like I'm anybody.
She is so, so sweet and so nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all.
She's a lovely, lovely woman in every single way.
Smart and successful it doesn't make any, you know, and it's not like I'm anybody's model for like romance or anything either. I mean, you know, I just with a mouthful of popcorn, I was sitting on the couch, you want to get married? while watching the Martha Stewart made for TV movie. That's how seductive I am. That's how Rick Emerson rolls with the ladies. Oh, God, kill me. At the news desk, here is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
52-year-old Michael Verano is not, they say, your typical burglary suspect. The married father of three admitted to break-ins in three different cities in Massachusetts. Just one city, three streets in Massachusetts, reportedly to feed and clothe his children. He told the police that he was on disability from the city of Brockton, Massachusetts, and that his wife had changed jobs and he has three kids and he needed some money. Neighbor said it was a surprise that the man next door would be accused of breaking into three separate homes. A neighbor said, I was actually really shocked because I've known him for about 2 years and they're really, really nice people. Police of Verano reached a new low when he was surprised by a homeowner during an attempted break-in. Allegedly at his side was his 4-year-old daughter. He told police later he didn't feel comfortable leaving her in the car.
Well, no, of course, that's dangerous.
So the incident may actually lead him, in addition to the burglary charges, to being charged with reckless endangerment of a child.
Well, that's – and so does it say – I mean, when it says he needed the money or whatever, does it, like, give the nature of his – like, was he, you know, laid off or the mills closed and there's no more work?
I guess he was a city worker in Brockton, Massachusetts. He was on disability. I guess he couldn't – and his wife had changed jobs, and so they –
Between jobs.
Strapped for money.
He was between gigs and she was...
It said she had changed jobs.
Okay.
And I guess I can understand that because I'm sure you've been in that situation before where you may leave one job and go to another one, but you have that period in between where you don't get any money.
Right.
Where you're not going to get paid for like 2 months.
Well, especially if you quit the first job for the second, you don't get unemployment or whatever. So the
policeman, Sergeant LaGrasta, said, it's very sad. Sad for him, sad for the child, it's sad for the victims. A lot of these people have lost some real sentimental stuff they're never going to be able to get back because he stole jewelry and trinkets in addition to cash, and none of it has been recovered so far.
This is really another one of those things, though, where, as I said, there's no problem in the world that can't be solved or mitigated by the use of rubbers. So I'm just saying, you know, maybe just popping out children as soon as you get married is not a shrewd financial survival strategy.
No. Let's do our Corpse Watch.
Here is your Corpse Watch for Thursday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. But I'm resurrecting memories of a love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone.
Here's Don Taylor with your Corpse Watch.
Gruesome details emerged yesterday during a preliminary hearing in the case of Patrick Lara of Merced, California, whom authorities said lived with his uncle's corpse for almost 30 days. Lara, 45, faced counts of involuntary manslaughter, elder abuse with the enhancement of causing death, and theft from an elder. The charge of theft from the elder was dropped because the dollar amount wasn't high enough, according to the district attorney. Detective Corey Gibson of Merced County Sheriff's Department was the first witness called. He said the body of Adrian Lugo, and we covered this story a couple months ago, I believe, Lara's 63-year-old uncle, was in a decomposing state. With mold, mildew, skin slippage.
Skin slippage is the worst thing I've ever heard in my life.
Odor, insect infestation, and leaking bodily fluids when he was discovered on February 22nd. Several photos used as evidence showed the decomposing state of Lugo's body and the rundown condition of the home. Another witness, a detective, described the living situation of the two men. Lara was the caretaker of his ailing uncle. However, during the interview, Lara told the police that his uncle fell out of bed early one morning and hurt himself. Lara kept checking on his uncle, bringing him food and helping to the bathroom, but eventually he just stopped.
I'm just, by the way, just as you speak right now, I'm just twittering this phrase I wish I'd never heard. Skin slippage.
Skin slippage. Brawley said that during an interview, an emotional Lara told the police he didn't call for help because he was concerned that once authorities arrived, the residence could be condemned because of its dilapidated condition.
You think? God damn.
So, yeah. It's okay to have the uncle rotting in the next room, but you don't want people to see that your house is in bed.
You don't want to see that the carpet is frayed and in a state of advanced disrepair.
Yes.
I wonder if there was some sort of – if he had like some kind of advanced plan for – you know, like if it passed 60 or 90 days. You know, like if he really – it doesn't sound like he'd really taken care of the body, you know, even for this period of time. But if he had some sort of long-term strategy, you know, or if at some point he was just going to – or is that a thing where like you get home and you look at the dishes in the sink and you go – I should do those, but WrestleMania's on. I guess I'll just I'll do those tomorrow. You know, and it's like, and, you know, every day there's one or two more fruit flies than the day before.
Yeah, and you just and probably each day as the insect infestation and the mold get worse, I would imagine it would actually become more difficult to remove the body.
Probably.
Parts would start coming off.
Or slipping off, Don.
Yes. The skin is skin slippage.
Jesus, God almighty. I mean, that's the worst phrase I've ever heard. Skin slippage. That's nearly as bad. It's like when there was that flesh-eating disease or whatever, or maybe it was Ebola or so. There was some dread illness that was going on for years ago. And there was that phrase like, and then the skin will just come off in sheets, which we thought was just like the worst the combination of words that had ever been created. All right, there's your Corpse Watch for whatever the hell day this is. Thursday, of course, it's
Thursday.
A Thursday, right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. But I'm resurrecting memories of a love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
Somebody emails in the question and says, when you're gone, can I stop by the studio and bring Dawn booze? You can do that today.
Yeah.
I mean, really, there's the doors are always open for that. That's
It's not like Rick is going to look askance at you.
Seriously. What do you mean?
Maybe the listener thinks that I will just need the booze more with you gone because I'll be sad.
I will not have this studio be the province of alcoholics, sir.
I will tell you, Monday, I'm going to be definitely needing some booze after the fact, I'm sure, because... Listeners may or may not be aware of the fact that that you to date have done all of the engineering duties on this show.
Oh, that's right.
You were sitting behind the board and doing stuff, and we decided that on Friday we will sit down and you will show me how to do everything, which means that I will basically have one run through of knowing which buttons to push and which dials to turn, and I'll take extensive notes. But I'm going to be here Monday going, eek! I don't know what to push next. Ah!
Well, so, what's the worst that could possibly happen?
I'm sure I'll be needing a couple of drinks after that's over.
Yeah, probably. Also, I got to fix it. So there's that thing that happens whenever if you inadvertently, not inadvertently, but every now and again the streaming connection will get lost. Doesn't happen that often. Maybe like once every 10, 12 days or something. It'll be like somewhere the streaming connection interrupted or the streaming encoder will freeze up or I got to reload it or something. And what I did not realize, but what I found out last week is that when that happens, it defaults to the best of show that is loaded on the actual server. And so so there's no dead air. So like if this gets disconnected, it just goes as like it does like a break glass in case of thing to this show that is loaded on the server itself out there in the cloud, as they say, on the net. Which is all well and good, except that I think that's from like Thanksgiving. Mm. And it says something, Happy Thanksgiving 2010. We'll be back in a week or whatever. And it's like, so there have been a couple times, like I think last Tuesday during the show, we just had to reset the thing really quickly and immediately just told everybody we were gone. So I got to fix that so that it doesn't, so that doesn't happen.
Also, all of the music and stuff is on your laptop.
Oh, there's that as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, Monday's going to be fun.
No, I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah. Okay. No one will notice anything amiss, I'm sure.
No, here's the one real advantage that you've got working for you. The one thing that is in your favor, well, two, because A, you're a sharp cookie, but that doesn't make any sense.
Sure it does.
Sharp cookie is a thing you don't want. Ow!
Yeah, that's true.
What are you eating? That's the sharpest cookie I've ever had in my life. Hold on, I can choke the rest of it down, though.
It's like those little tubes that they stick in the ice cream and that you bite them and they hurt you. You know what I mean, those little tube cookies? Whatever they're called.
Yes, those little tube cookies. Most folks call them green onions, but they're really tube cookies. I don't know what you're talking about. What do you...
They're these little hard cookies that are...
Tube cookies.
They're shaped like tubes.
And like from Pepperidge Farm?
Yeah, you can get them from Pepperidge Farm, sure. And then sometimes you get... The people will put them decoratively into like ice cream something, poking out.
Right,
and you take a bite of them and they're very hard and they can like break into shards and poke you.
It's just like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was just going to say that you got two things going for you. One is that you're not unlike Stephen Hawking. You're a pretty bright person, and then also, let's just be honest. It's not like this show is run like technically all that well. Anyway, I mean, here's like a little trade secret. Just I don't want to shatter anybody's illusions. I'm not really that good at what I do, like in an objective technical sense. Not like fishing for compliments. I'm just saying that like if you were to listen to me or this show or any version of this show that has ever aired, and then listen to like your average professional broadcaster, we have a little bit of a laissez-faire attitude towards certain things in a delivery and technical sense, and just in the general sort of elan with which we entertain the people. So I don't really think the average the program is allowed to just be hosted by a guy who's basically just a functional gibbon.
No, but on the other hand, though, if I poke the wrong series of buttons or do something wrong, there won't be any show. Nothing will be going out there.
Well, that's true, I guess. There's that to consider.
Yeah.
So, well, don't let it keep you awake at night. I wouldn't worry about it all that much. So forth. Here's Don Taylor at the news. Let's do one more, and then we'll take a break here.
Okay. As we discussed earlier, in the opening scene of Episode 1, Season 4 of The Wire, Marlo Stanfield's assassin Felicia Snoop Pearson pays a memorable and foreboding visit to a local Home Depot. After rattling off the issues she's been having with her current nail gun in that almost impossible to understand Baltimore dialect that she has, a helpful salesman recommends a shiny new model fueled by gunpowder. Snoop thanks him, hands over a wad of $100 bills, and exits the store giddily. The nail gun will be used to seal the doors of the vacants where the bodies of Marlowe's victims will be dumped. Needless to say, Snoop's character was terrifying.
Yes.
Part of Snoop's appeal on the show was derived from the realistic nature of her character. She was plucked from the streets of Baltimore and cast in the show, which explains her accent. And since The Wire wrapped filming, Snoop has totally remained in character. She was arrested this morning in Baltimore, along with 30 other people, during a DEA raid connected to a large-scale heroin and marijuana operation, which is essentially a scene straight out of The Wire, only with, minus the marijuana. This is her most notable brush with the law since a second-degree murder conviction at 14 years old.
Yeah, also, she, like, killed a guy,
yeah,
I think.
Which landed her behind bars for over 6 years. On the bright side, there have been no mention of nail guns. So.
Yeah, I know that there was she got some trouble last year, 2 years ago, where they found there was, I don't know, it was like somebody, for whatever reason, the cops came by her house or something. And she had a bunch of weed at her place, but it was like for personal use, since there was a whole lot of like, well, don't do it again. Because which I think probably had something to do with the fact that, I mean, the Wire obviously is, as much as it's well regarded everywhere, is obviously huge in Baltimore. I mean, because it's, that film crew, and Homicide for 7 years before that was set there.
Well, I remember the Ace of Cakes guys, they did a cake for a party that the Wire production crew was showing, and them being natives of Baltimore, they were just giddy with excitement. Yeah. And they did stuff. They did a whole giant Hogwarts for Harry Potter. They've done all kinds of things for big scale events. But the fact they were doing a cake for The Wire just had them just dancing out of their skin.
I would
so
say
excited.
That The Wire is – it is not an overstatement to say that The Wire is to Baltimore as The Sopranos is to New Jersey. But even more so, I think, because The Sopranos, while obviously rooted in a certain kind of reality, is not necessarily I don't know how true to life some certain aspects of The Sopranos are. I mean, I think
lot of people in New Jersey would like to not have so much attention paid to that mafia stuff, really.
And I don't really know. I'm not saying there is no mafia or whatever, but it's just, I don't necessarily know that anybody would view that as a slice of life for the average criminal element, in New Jersey. Whereas with The Wire, there is very much a sense that, like, there are just scores and scores of people who are, on that show who represent huge swaths of the population, who are just, who are sort of, avatars for large sections of the populace. But here's the thing about the character of Snoop, and Stephen King actually wrote an essay about her. He said that she was the most terrifying female villain he had ever seen on television. And and I'm not alone in this, that for several episodes, I actually could not tell if the character was male or female, because she's so strangely androgynous. And when I say strangely androgynous, it's not even like she's butch. It's just that she is in the way in dress and in just affect, she is a total blank. That's the thing about the character of Snoop, and I'm not spoiling anything here. It's just that this is just an observation. This is not like a plot point or whatever. The character of Snoop is so terrifying because she's not even evil. She's not even a bad person. She's just completely and totally empty. She is totally amoral. And I don't even want to say that she's not even a sociopath in the diagnostic sense, because sociopaths have that thing of, blending in and putting on masks that represent whatever they need to be in the moment. And she's not even a sociopath because she plays no role. She doesn't ever pretend to be anything else. She's just an absolute blank of a human being. She is a person with no demonstrable she has no demonstrable personality at all of any kind. And that carries over to the way she dresses, the way she looks. And so for the first few weeks, I think everybody was like, well, who is that? Is it a boy? Is it a girl? And you could – and then it's like you realize she's a girl. And not only that, but a girl who would just – as my dad used to say about any number of people, kill you just as soon as look at you. And I mean, it's just – and really is just – is, I would say, uniquely terrifying. So anyway, it's it is too bad that she got busted, though, because there was – she put out a book last year about like her – growing up, and because she was a crack baby, and and obviously born in terrible circumstances early on, ended up had this murder beef, as they say, and then got on The Wire and was trying to turn her life around. And who knows, maybe it's all a big misunderstanding, but it seems like that's probably not the case. So
probably
what are you gonna do? All right, we should take a break here. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on, we got your Clown Watch coming up. Also, Clue number 4 for this week's Name That Snack Contest. What else do we have for the good people of the audience, Don?
Well, we'll get that story about the computer cookies and such. And we're going to talk about Justified.
Okay.
And I believe you have did you find that song? The Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, I have to look for it. We haven't really had a chance because we started the show, and then I haven't really been able to root around for it. So
you're
a
busy man.
I've been here speaking with you.
You've been entertaining the people,
sharing my thoughts with the people of whatever. All right, so we'll do this. We'll come back on the other side with more of the Rick Emerson Show continues next. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
The little black train is coming, Get all your business right. You better set your house in order, 'cause that train may be here tonight. Have your ticket in your hand. The little black train is coming. Get on and join that band. Bells ring and the whistle blows. There's a mission from on high. Step on up to that platform, 'cause that train may be here tonight. Black train is coming. Get all your business right. You better set your house in order, 'cause that train may be here tonight. Station in judgment for this life. Wisdom from experience, 'cause that train may be here tonight. Darkness has descended. Speak up for Mr. Towns. The power and the glory, the soul lives on throughout. Black train is coming. Get all your business right. You better set your house in order, 'cause that train may be here
to the Emerson News Network.
Now that you are gone, I wish
listening to the Emerson News Network.
I'm just afraid that every song is going to have like a goat whinnying or something in the background without warning. Or just some sort of a, you know, like a... just be like a dolphin, just sort of... All right. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. It is 503-505-6964. Apparently, I'm the next contestant on Star Search. If you'd like to email, you can do that as well. It's, damn this nose hair of mine. I'm sorry, I got this nose hair that's just bothering me.
Is that what got in your eye?
Yeah, yes.
You should trim that if it's getting all the way up into your eye.
I feel like the world's worst New Yorker cartoon. I seem to have something in my eye, and then it's just nose hairs going straight into the... Nah, I've got this, this nose whisker that I gotta pull out. Avert your eyes. All right, I think I got it. Awesome. Anyway, it's Rick at RickEmerson.com. If you'd like to email today, it's Don at RickEmerson.com. As well, coming up later on, we got your Justified recap from last night, also Clown Watch, and more. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
And I'm writing this down to include in the show notes later.
Rick plucks
a nose hair. There we go. Okay. A camel was injured Thursday morning after an Indian gar, a type of wild cow, escaped its exhibit at the Miami Zoo for about 30 minutes. Zoo officials said the 1.5-year-old male gar was reported missing at about 10:25 a.m. The zoo's communications director, Ron McGill, issued a statement explaining that the gar crossed the moat in its display, went through a service area, and got into the dromedary camel exhibit. The camels got stressed and started running around. McGill said an elderly female camel fell down, suffering some scrapes and bruises. The camel is standing up again, but zoo workers will keep an eye on her to make sure she doesn't have any serious injuries.
The story seems very complex, and my brain was having difficulty keeping up with it. And so by the time I got a handle on what was happening, the story was already over. Hmm. So there was something got out and ran around somewhere else.
Yes.
And then now, but the camel is safe.
Right.
Okay. All right.
And the gar never got into the public areas.
And the gar is what again?
It's a wild cow.
It's not a thing that...
It kind of has that... It kind of looks like a water buffalo kind of a thing.
It's a wild cow?
Yeah. It's remember we talked about...
We always joke about that.
Whether there were wild cows.
But I didn't think there...
Yeah. And there's a picture of it. It's kind of like a water buffalo.
Okay. Well, that's disappointing. I was thinking a gar was a thing from like, you know... Yeah. You know, from like it was like some sort of Legend of Zelda creature that I don't know, that fell asleep in front of a flask of some kind that you had to obtain.
Now, this is something from India, and he looks a little like one of the animals from Where the Wild Things Are. And apparently he just went and ran around in the camel exhibit, and the camels went, eek, and got, like, scared. And one camel who was old went, I fell down. And then it got back up, and now it's okay.
Life is just one big Richard Scarry book to you, isn't it?
Kind of.
Hey, did we talk about this last week? Did we talk about the fact that Legend of Zelda is either 20 or 25 years old?
We did, and that made Sarah feel really, really old.
I think it must be, well, what year is it? 2011. So Legend of Zelda, that's got to be, what, 25? It was like 86? Legend of Zelda came out of the 80s or in the 90s? See, I didn't know. I never had a Nintendo. So I didn't. This
yeah,
is
I
the
didn't
thing
either.
That
I, so.
I got it. Following the pattern in adulthood that I had in life, I when I was a kid, I would just get things when they were old and irrelevant and no one cared about them anymore. So I was sort of retro, but like not really by choice growing up, because I got the 2600, the Stella, once my fat bastard cousin was done with it. So it was with the Nintendo. I never had the NES or anything. We did get, Lauren and I got a Super Nintendo once her uncle, who's like 1,000 years old, but is like a video game fanatic. Once he moved on to the, whatever it is, was it the N64? Once he moved to the Nintendo 64, he, like, kicked the Super Nintendo down the west. But that means that I missed the whole Legend of Zelda sort of era of the Nintendo. You're doing math on your fingers? Are you really counting something on your fingers right now? That's awesome.
Yeah. Never mind.
What was the answer you came up with? Well, you can't count on your fingers and then not tell me what you got.
Well, how many years ago was 81? Was that 30 years ago? Yeah, because this is 2011.
Yes.
Yeah. I have trouble with that because I always think that the 80s were 20 years ago. And we've reached this point now that it's
Is it because from 80 to 2000 is 20 years? And so because we're still in the 2000s?
I think so, yes.
Hey, here's the thing. Since it's Thursday, I can just say crap that doesn't have anything to do with anything else. Here's the thing. There's that whole that Heisenberg uncertainty principle, which everybody misstates. I only have the vaguest sort of idea of what it actually really says, because first of all, it's in German, and so when they translate it to English, it just becomes very, very difficult to understand. So I heard Bill Bryson explain it, and even then, I only kind of know what it actually says. But it is used as a sort of a catch-all way of saying that when you think too hard about something or focus on something too much, then paradoxically you won't get the result you're looking for after, because by dint of focusing or observing, you have changed the circumstances and rendered it less likely you're going to get the outcome. Whatever. So here's a version. An example of that I think about like way more often than I should. I think about this like maybe once a week. It's this. Did you realize that I think almost entirely because we thought about it all the time, we never did come up with a slang term for the first 10 years of this decade or of this century.
Yeah.
There was that whole thing of, what are we going to call them? And everybody said the aughts, but we all knew that was dumb. So, and nobody could remember.
We just gave up.
Like, nobody could find a book that said what they called it like 100 years ago. Like, nobody wrote it down then or whatever. There was no papyrus to be had. So we were all like, the media would just, they were just, every single day as we led up to like the turn of the century or whatever, they were just like, and what are we going to call the first 10 years? We'll have to wait and see. But it's like we were all waiting for it. And so by definition, like nobody ever just started saying something. So it never arrived. So now we just have no term.
Yeah.
We'll never have a term for it.
I like, though, now that it's 2011, we are now far enough away from it that we can look back and say, back in '08.
Yeah, I suppose.
Back in '03. And we can be like old guys.
But it's, see, but that's the thing is, it's like we have no non-ironic term for the first 10 years.
No.
It's just, which, like, you know, they must have had. Like, there must, maybe they did say aughts, like 100 and whatever years ago. But there was this whole thing of like, well, no one alive then is around to tell us now, you know, whatever. Mm. And so we just made such a big deal of it that, like, now it never arrived.
We should have asked that World War II guy, the World War I guy, while he was still alive. But now he's dead, and we missed our chance.
This is why you need to be elected to some sort of governmental office. So you can be thinking about these things.
Yeah.
Hey,
I was thinking about the thing, though, because 1981, this week, 30 years ago, remember the Albert Brooks movie, Modern Romance?
I do.
30 years ago.
Now it's Modern Romance.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, next month, The Howling, April 10th, was 1981.
D. Wallace Stone's The Howling, 1981?
30 years ago.
Okay, do you realize now we've just...
And Excalibur.
We're now just sitting in a room talking about, hey, do you remember? Do you remember when that came out? And also, we're sitting in a room just talking about Albert Brooks movies.
Yeah. But still, it's.
We should just take our lives today before things get any worse.
We're not very cool, are we?
No.
No.
Okay.
Let's talk about this thing.
It's not even that I'm in a bad mood today. No. If it seemed like I was.
You seem kind of weary, kind of resigned, kind of. I don't know.
I was just going to say, yeah, if it seemed like I was in a bad mood during Legion of News or whatever, it really wasn't. I wasn't. I was just sort of, you know. Again, it was just that thing of just sort of being. Today I just have kind of a. I feel like I'm all kiffed up today.
It's kind of interesting because this was like yesterday. I did Ham-Fisted Radio with Bobby Roberts, and he was having an existential crisis, and we spent an hour basically talking about his issues. It was a little self analytical. So it's if you want to talk about it, if you want to discuss any of these things, I'm here for you.
An existential crisis. Maybe I am. I don't know. I'm trying to make a joke about existentialism. Nah, it's just not. See, it's the wrong day for that. By definition, today's the day that I can't do it.
How's your self-esteem?
All my Lockean humor has. I'm sorry?
How's your self-esteem?
Well, as compared to what? As compared to me on another day, or as compared to the average person?
No, I don't. Just in general, as you know, on a scale from 1 to 10, how would you say your self-esteem is right now?
I don't know. Now I'm not sure what the answer is. So I guess lower because of that. I guess
I would think you should feel pretty good about yourself. You're going to New York. You're going to see Book of Mormon. You got a book.
Well, that's
you're going
true.
Because you're about to be a published author.
That's true. Well, that's what I was asking. Is it relative to how I normally feel, or is it relative to like how the average Joe might feel about himself on a given day?
Sometimes, though, these things kind of have a backlash. Like something good is about to happen, and there's this part of you that just feels like you don't deserve it, and you actually will have a self-esteem
crisis.
Oh,
I deserve it. Let's have no illusions about that, Don. I deserve it. I deserve all this. And more. I deserve all of this and a flock of buttery maidens. I don't know.
Buttery as in creamy and delicious, or buttery as in kind of greasy and slippery?
Well, and also they're a flock, and so I don't know what that means. Apparently they're geese as well. I don't really know what's up with that. See, this is what I'm talking about. It's like I'm not in a bad mood, and I'm not like it's not like I'm feeling anxious or filled with it's not like I'm agitated or excited, you know, in some sort of negative sense about things. I just got that day. You know what? I got that day where I just feel like a dish rag that somebody just twisted and then just left hanging over the side of the sink.
Is it ennui?
No. See, that's the thing. It's not even ennui. It's just I just feel sapped. I think that's what it is today. As I'm saying, that is maybe, I did not get a chance to listen to Ham-Fisted Radio yesterday because I'm a terrible person, and so thanks for making me feel bad about that. But I'm not sure you said this. Bobby was sort of feeling just sort of a down kind of a day or whatever. My thing isn't that. It's just that I just feel beat. I just feel just absolutely just drained. That's what it is. One of those days where it's like you just wake up and you feel like somebody has spent all the hours you were asleep beating you with a pipe of some kind.
Yes.
Not even like a physical soreness, but you would just kind of go like, you know, it's like dragging yourself from the bed to the chair and from the chair to the office and here, and then just opening my mouth, I got all this talking. And again, let's not confuse it with actual complaining. Because I realized, there's some guy working at a lumber mill somewhere, you know, that would like to sit on his big stupid ass and just, talk about whatever. I'm really not complaining.
Yeah, there's some guy listening to this right now via podcast, via download, who's at his job at an aluminum foundry.
Yeah,
going, Rick Emerson's having a hard life with his book tour and his trips to
New York. So that's what I'm saying. So I don't want to ever be unclear by this. I always try to draw this distinction. Let's have no illusions. I am aware that I am, really one of the luckiest guys on earth and least deserving of that luck as well. So I'm aware of all of these things. So I'm not complaining about going to New York or the book or the job or anything. It's just one of those, which does not happen all that often, but just one of those days where I just wake up and I just feel like every single one of my batteries is doing that thing where it's like flashing the sort of lightning bolt icon or whatever that wizard needs food badly. It's like, you know, you get like on your electric shaver or your whatever, where you just get the little thing. It's like you have one shave left and then the battery power will be drained. I feel like all of my batteries today are just on they're like at about 4% energy. So, again, it's not like I'm sad or unhappy or pissed off about something. I think it's just kind of this weird exhaustion. Not even like I really need to sleep, though. Just sort of like I need to just, I don't know, kind of sit in a dark room and just stare into the middle distance for a couple of hours.
Would wasabi almonds help?
They would. Yeah. No, they really wouldn't. No. That's they're just going to make me mush-mouthed. Yeah. But you'll note that we're here playing through the pain because, again, talking, how difficult can it really be? It's just one of those things. So I didn't want it to be read as though I were in some sort of a foul mood, which is not the case.
No, it didn't seem that way. You just seemed,
Which is what, you know, the thing about it is, and I was told the Bruce about this like last year or something when we were getting ready to launch this show, like before we even, I think, had actually announced it. I think it was about this time last year because I think it was right as we were getting ready to go to the Sleep Country thing. We hadn't made any sort of announcement about it yet. And I was talking to Bruce. I'm like, yeah, well, we're going to form a little company and do a little show and the hey and the whatnot and the, you know, look over there and the ow, it hurts me and the everything. And so getting ready to put all this together. And he said, what about the book you're doing? And I said, well, you know, the book's also happening. He said, you can't do both at once. And I just said, well, I don't really know that I have any choice at this juncture, Bruce. The thing with the book is. I mean, you know, you've worked at newspapers and writing, and you dwell in the artistic realm, as do many of the folks in our sort of circle of acquaintances. And it's like with the book, it's like you just never, like, you know, you always just have to assume that stuff like that will never come to anything. You all, because the odds are, it's just like most scripts don't get made, most movies don't get produced, most books don't get published, most records don't ever get released by anybody. So. Like, it's not a thing you can ever bank on. Like, if you're working on something like that, you can't just go, hey, I'm recording this record album, which will certainly be picked up and released by somebody because I'm awesome. Like, you can just never do that. So it was that thing of just figuring, well, I'll just launch several large projects at once because surely only, you know, one of them at most will ever get any traction. The others will probably fall by the wayside. So there's no way that I will find myself in a situation where I am working on these two large projects simultaneously for exactly the same period of time, because what are the odds that would ever happen? So again, it's not a complaint. It's the furthest thing from that. It's just sort of the luck of the draw, and good luck, you know, at that. But it's the luck of the draw that I'm just sort of working on, you know, it's like the ramp up to actually getting the book finished and published happened at the same time the ramp up to this is happening. And then, of course, you know, and so blah, 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 and here I am. So anyway, so I think that is occasionally I just sort of wake up and go, ugh, I really need a nap. But no nap is forthcoming.
Well, to make you feel even worse, I have an email here that says, uncomfortable question for you to ask Rick, from listener John, who says,
great.
So, Rick, how much or even have you donated to the Pajama Bowl team? My son in the Navy donated $100 last night. Woot.
Okay. Well, to be fair, that was a thing that I told Jenny that I was going to do as soon as the show ended, and I failed to write it down. Hold on. I'll put it in my – where's my iPhone? I'm going to put it down in my planner right now. All right, you're my witness. I'm putting into my planning application, which is right there, which has a big check mark on the front of it. That's how you know it's where I go to get things done. Don, hold on a second. Donate. Bam. All right, so there you go.
Hey, look at that. Hey.
Awesome. Here's Don Taylor at the. Did I play the news sounder?
I don't know.
Movie doctor in.
Okay, we'll call it. Call it good. There you go. There's your news sounder.
Computer cookies are tracking just about everything you do on the internet, Rick Emerson.
These days.
From your spending habits to your donations to Sleep Country to your income.
To my Sleep Country?
To your donations to Sleep Country.
Oh, okay. I thought you said. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Joel Stein chronicles his investigation on cookies in Time Magazine's latest issue. I am a huge fan of Joel Stein, by the way. He used to write for Entertainment Weekly.
I was going
to
ask where I know him from.
Yeah, he used to write for Entertainment Weekly, and he did their.
He's hilarious.
He did their TV stuff, and he's hilarious. So he chronicled his investigation on cookies in Time Magazine's latest issue. He says companies doing the tracking aren't always very accurate about your identity.
Sometimes they're really just interested in what you're doing on the web right this second or in the last few hours. So there was a while where one of the companies thought I was an 18 to 19-year-old woman because I had bought some lingerie for my wife.
He says the tracking process does have some benefits.
They're able to really customize ads for you in that instead of seeing ads that aren't relevant to me at all, when ads become super relevant, they kind of become information because it's about what band that you love is in town or, you know, what director has a movie coming out that you really like.
Well, that's the thing that people, you know, as much as people, I don't like my information being in the hands of that Zuckerstein fellow. I don't trust him. But it's like it is that sort of thing that allows Netflix to suggest things that you end up actually liking. So it is a double-edged sword.
Yeah, I'm not. I think that there is such a thing as being too worried about, you know, your internet privacy. And that's what I mean.
Well, there just is no privacy. You just have to sort of. Somebody said the greatest thing to me. I didn't mean to interrupt. Somebody said, it's not even losing your privacy. It's just like losing the illusion that it actually existed. I mean, because somebody somewhere can track everything you're doing online. The average person maybe can't, but it's all footprintable.
Well, and that's always. And that's been the case, you know, that's always been the case from the get go that people don't really think about this. Back in the olden days when I was on Usenet, I had a boyfriend who was a software programmer, and he was pointing out to people who were like engaging in some sort of a nasty flame war with him at one time. And he was explaining to them, you realize you're not actually anonymous, right? That I can track your IP address. I can like find out your name. I can use MapQuest to get directions to your house.
Right.
And I could do all of that inside of 15 minutes. If I wanted to. So maybe, you know, maybe you shouldn't be such a douche. You're not anonymous. And if you piss off the wrong person and they actually know how to track your information, and it's not hard, you know, you could get yourself in a world of hurt.
There is that. As much as I didn't care for Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, it was a fundamentally useless film in most ways. There was one great thing in that movie, and it was the montage at the end where they were talking about that site, which was clearly supposed to be Ain't It Cool News, and where they just went door to door and just beat the crap out of internet posters. Where they just went, are you like Goblin Blood 7-5? Yes, I am. Bam! And they would just beat them in the face. That was deeply satisfying because, you know, that scratched a collective itch that every single person who's ever been on the internet for more than 5 seconds has had. Where you want to find like Eric Blood Axe, you know, 72 and just go beat his ass.
I'm also interested that there are still people who are worried about buying things online.
Sarah.
because I've been purchasing stuff online. Dear God, I don't even know how long at this point, 20 years. You know, I was an early user of Amazon back when at the end of the year they would send you presents.
Right.
Because,
right.
You know.
Because there were only seven people who used it.
Right. So they sent me like a travel. I still have it. I still have like a travel mug, a coffee mug, insulated coffee mug that has it says Amazon on it because they just sent it. At Christmas time to thank me for buying a book from them. And so, and I, in like 20 years or whatever, I have never once had a problem with anyone misusing, you know, my identity or swiping my credit card number or anything. Not once.
The only time that's ever happened to me was somebody who got it out of a dumpster behind a supermarket. Because that's where people would do the thing of the receipt or that old like thing with your card, and they would just dump it into the trash, and some guy took it out of the bin in the back and charged something on it. That's the only time.
And the thing is, you actually couldn't be safer than buying stuff online because
right.
if somebody did get a hold of your card number and then like bought something online, they have to get it mailed to themselves.
Right.
So it's like they're really easy to track. And credit cards and banks with debit cards and stuff are very, very good about when you call them, you say, I didn't make that transaction. Because
right.
Patrick lost his wallet once and a guy bought a bunch of like really stupid stuff.
It's
like
always something
$150
retarded.
Worth of stuff at the Fossil
hot
watch
dogs and cologne
and stuff.
Yeah.
And the bank was, you know, we immediately called them and the bank was like, oh, okay.
I've actually had the bank, and this is the sort of thing that I'm grateful for. I've had the bank actually call me several times and say, well, just so you know, we've stopped the activity in your card because something really weird got purchased. You know, and you could be creeped out by that, but I'm not because it's not like I'm, you know, it's not like I'm not like I'm, you know, buying like a dildo making kit or something. So it's like they would just call me and they'd say, did you buy? And it would be, you know, it would be like something bizarre that I'd purchased online for a present or as a gift for somebody else or something. And I would say yes. And they go, okay, well, and what is your social number? And I give, you know, what I'd identify myself. And they go, okay, we're going to turn your card back on. And that's actually – and I actually like that because I like the idea that somebody is using those sort of algorithms or whatever for good to spot when somebody's up to no good with something.
Yeah, I had my PayPal account suspended when I first started my chocolate business because at the sudden amount of money coming into my account raised one of those red flags where it was like, there's an unusual amount of activity on your thing. It was like, you know, because like in 3 days I made like $2,000. And up to that point, I'd never had more than like a couple hundred bucks in there at a time. And so I called them. I was like, why did you suspend my account? And they said, oh, it was this.
We're not used to you making money.
Yeah, we're not used to you having any actual money in
a
there.
A deposit is different for you, Don.
Yeah.
Sarah, she may have gotten better about this, but Sarah for the longest time wouldn't buy anything online. I mean, up to a couple years ago, she refused to buy things online. And I would do that. And it's like it is that thing that is I am like this too, so I shouldn't, and I'm really not criticizing, but it shouldn't even have surprised me because I can be this way about stuff where even when someone explains the logic of something to me, like I have to just sort of come to it on my own. I have to just make the decision for myself. Like it took me forever to get to the point, and I think this is a common thing. It took me forever to get to the point where I would deposit a check into an ATM. Because I was just, you know, because I had some hang up in my head. Like I wanted to go and I wanted to see them deposit it. It's not like I even had to have the money in my hand because I would just stick it in the account. But I wanted to have it like – I wanted to have somebody like on the spot, a human being like say like, and so this is now deposited. You've got this much money. Hand me the receipt. Not just because I needed the receipt, but because I think it's like a human nature thing of going, like I just did with the task. You're my witness, Don. I put this on the list. Like you want to be able to go, that guy saw me put it in the account.
An actual human handled my check.
Yeah. Joel saw me put this in the checking account, you know, in case there's an issue. Whereas like, you know, you put it in an ATM and they go, we never got it. And you go, but I put it in. And they go, we never got it. And you go, but I just, and it's like, what are you going to do? So I had to sort of come around to that on my own. Sarah saw that she wouldn't buy anything online. And I tried to sort of explain it to her. And she was just like, I know, it doesn't make any sense, but it's just, I just can't do it. So I think she finally was convinced eventually, but it took a long time.
The check thing actually reminds me of something. We had talked before about how, you know, there's the iPhone app that Chase Bank has where you can take a picture of the front and the back of the check and that it will deposit it into your account. I saw an ad last night for Walgreens. Walgreens now has a phone app that you take a picture of. It basically scans the barcode on your prescription, and then you just point it at the bottle of your pill bottle, and basically take a picture of the UPC code and send it in. And then they'll refill your prescription. That's so instead weird. Of having to call them and go through the thing of punching in all the buttons and all the number of the prescription, which I still always thought was like, this is so much better than going into the pharmacy or calling them on the phone. Yeah, I'll do this on the phone. Instead of even going to that much trouble to call and dial 8 and then dial 1 and then punch in all the numbers, you can just pull up the Walgreens app and say, refill my prescription, and then just point your phone at the bottle and go, click.
That's bizarre.
I know.
Is that just for Walgreens?
Yeah, it's just Walgreens. Right. I mean, maybe other places have it too, but the ad I saw last night was for Walgreens.
So
I'm going to try it the next time I need to refill something.
That's really, because that is really handy because otherwise, never mind. It was just because it just minimizes you. We were just going to do the thing again of complaining about something which we have no right to complain about because the old fashioned way where I had to take up my iPhone and. from the middle of nowhere, log on and actually request and then verify the shipment of something was a lot of work. And so now there's a single button that I have to press.
And this is another one of those things where even that's going to be quaint at some point, 10 years from now, when we have the implants in our heads or we just put on our little computer hats. And then all you have to do is just look at something and it will happen. We'll go, remember when you had to take out your phone actually point it at something?
I was just in my car yesterday and I'm just driving along and I've got, I'm in my car. So yesterday I'm driving along. I'm in my car with my iPhone sitting on the seat. So I'm in my car. I am streaming in my car an interview with Aaron Sorkin that was in the iTunes store or whatever. There was some interview with him for The Social Network. It was Jesse Eisenberg. Jesse Eisenberg. So I'm driving in the car. I've got my iPhone. While I'm driving along, I'm, at a red light, I look down and I'm like, what should I listen to? And I find this thing and I said, President, I'm listening to this interview with Aaron Sorkin, which doesn't reside on my computer, which I didn't own 30 seconds earlier, and which is actually just coming to me from space into my phone, into my car while I'm driving along. And then at one moment I decide that I need to call my wife about something. So I press a single button on the little wireless speaker that's in the roof of my car. And with pressing a single button on the button, then the roof of my car, it interrupts the streaming interview with Aaron Sorkin that I didn't own 30 seconds earlier and that is now magically playing through my stereo, even though the stereo is not actually hooked to the phone. I press a button on the ceiling and it interrupts that by fading it down and I just say, call Lara. And it just and the phone just goes, calling Lara. And then it just calls and then she's there on the phone moments later. I finish the call. I press the button. She goes away and Aaron Sorkin returns to my speaker magically. In 30 seconds, I did all of those things. And, and then I was, but of course then I'm cursing the traffic. The traffic is really slow. Modern life sucks. So that's the sort of thing when I complain about being tired today because I got all the stuff I'm doing. That's an iPhone complaint, where you're just it's so hard to look through all of these applications to find the free thing that does the magical thing that I need.
I get like that, though. I've been like that for the last couple of days, though. Part of it was because I was sick, but also I just had this pile of things that needed to be done. And some of it was just emails that needed to be sent and questions I needed to ask people about things and just think just small little things that needed to be taken care of, but I just kept putting them off. And the more I put, and I get like that. The more I put something off, the more I'm like, oh God, I got to do it. And I go to bed at night and I'm falling asleep. I forgot. And it becomes this huge weight around my neck. And then typically it's like this. I come in here early this morning, do some stuff, print out the news, and then go, okay, I really got to take care of all those emails. I said, it took me 10 minutes. I'm just rattle off an email, send. Rattle off another email, send. Ask somebody questions, send. And I look up, it's been 10 minutes. I've taken care of all of it. But for three days, I've been just going, this is going to be just such responsibility is so hard.
Now, email is a ball breaker for me, though. It really is. It is just the email is the thing that just more faster than anything will just make me just go, and I just close the laptop and I don't even want to think about it. I don't want to, I have those days, not all the time, but I have those days where literally, not figuratively, literally it comes in faster than I can answer it. And I'm not saying that's because I'm massively, it's because everybody loves me. I'm just saying, there's just, with every day you're alive, more and more people exist on the planet, and they all have email accounts. And everybody my mom is 76 and has an email account and sends me, not a lot of stuff, but she'll forward me something she needs or a question she has about her computer or something. And so things just come in faster than I can get them answered. That's why I finally got that voice recognition software so I can just go, Yes, the answer is 5. Send. Next. No, you gotta turn to the left, and then it's the third shelf down. Next. Send. You know, and just, like, just batting them away as quickly as I can. I mean, you know the guy who runs, is it Slashdot? No, maybe it's Kevin Rose at Dig. I think maybe he's the guy who runs Dig. He has the greatest little thing that he does. He actually just he has started this movement called, I forget the name of it. It's a movement. It's called like the two sentence movement or something. And he's a little signature file, just saying, you know, because in order to save everyone time, including you, I now no longer respond. I no longer respond with anything longer than two sentences. My responses are no more than two sentences in length. If you really, really need more information, call me or email back and clarify. I need a little bit more on this, please. It's like, otherwise, I'm going to be responding to all my emails in two sentences or less. It might be three, actually. But his signature file says that in some real brief fashion. And there's a link to, like, the two sentences movement or something. I do know somebody, I won't say who this is, but I do know someone who has taken an alternate method as opposed to putting a signature file that says, this is really short because I got no time and neither do you. Because the person you're responding to is equally busy.
Yeah.
I do know somebody else that has just, for all of their email, has just been putting sent from my iPhone. Because then no one expects you to send very much back.
Patrick does not – he doesn't spend a lot of time on the computer except unless he's playing games. And he only like actually finally buckled down and got an email account I think maybe 2 years ago.
What?
Yeah, and so he can talk to the guys in his gaming group. He doesn't email anybody. He doesn't – you know, he doesn't do this. He has a Facebook account and I think he has like 5 friends. You know, it's kind of –
What do you mean he just got an email account like a couple years ago? That's insane.
Yeah, well, he never –
there's nothing wrong with it. It's just bizarre.
He never really had anybody he needs to email. So yeah. So and then he would have – and he'd go, could you send an email to my mom? I'm like, send your own damn email. And he'd go, I don't have an email account. So anyway, so he'll look over my shoulder sometimes and I'm doing stuff and he'll be like, how is it you have 400 – emails like in your inbox? And I'm going, well, I haven't cleaned it out in a couple of days.
Right.
He goes, what do you mean a couple of days? I'm like, I get like 125 emails like a day.
Yeah.
You know, it's I have to remember to, and I always forget to hit archive because I use Gmail. And it's like I should read it and then hit archive and I don't. And so it ends up just sitting there until I go back and like get rid of it later. You know, and I wish I had that as an automatic thing of like read the email and then instead of just moving on to the next one, if I just take that moment to hit archive,
right,
it would go away. But the thing is, but Patrick just, he's like, how is it that you have 125 emails a day? And I'm like, I'm on mailing lists. I get forwarded news alerts. I get updates when people update on Facebook. I have people actually emailing me about stuff. It's kind of insane.
And then you complain. And then every time I complain about this, then I get this in all caps. This just says, and it's elongated. It's drawn out with like 100 U's in the middle. It says, well, excuse me, I'm never emailing a certain radio host again, am I? I'm not. See, the thing is, here's the reason. The actual show email is not I'm not just saying this. The actual show email is actually not a problem because most of the time, and you've seen this probably by now, that most of the time when people email and their listeners, they're not really expecting a response. And I don't mean they're not expecting a response because, like, I'm so important I would never. It's just that they want to mention something. Like, they're not asking a question. They're saying,
yeah,
hey, look at this girl covered in hair, you know, and they'll send us a link. Or, like, hey, when you get a chance, check out this YouTube video. Or, you know, here's the thing about tuna sandwiches. Like, they're not emailing to go, like, you know, hey, what's the bank account, you know, number for that thing we do, you know? Or, like, what is, you know, or, like, where did you put the extra coffee or something? Or, you know, what are your 5 thoughts on the following thing for this business thing for whatever? You know, the listener email is actually fine because it's like it is almost a one-way communication. They're just sort of observing things.
Yeah.
But it's just, yeah, it just becomes a huge – somebody's asking –
And then with the people who send the email, it's like – a lot, most of the time, yeah, they're just making a statement. They're not asking a question. And most of the time, I don't feel obliged to email back. And sometimes it's like, you know, I can just mention what they said on the air, and that counts as responding.
That totally counts. That's better than responding because then it's like a personal response to them. It is like the confidential to Cucamonga thing. I've thought about getting an autoresponder that says, I got your email. Probably won't get answered. You know, probably won't be responded to, but it's going to be read. You know, let's just be happy with that. I haven't. But the here's the other thing that I should do. This is something that I should just institute in my life, where I answer all of the emails, but then they just go into a hopper, and I just press one big send button before I go to bed, because then what that stops is if I just like answer all my emails but then don't actually send any of those responses and I send them all at once at like 2 a.m., most people are going to be asleep, so they won't be able to do that thing of immediately answering and responding back with three more questions. That's great. Hey, while you're here, let me ask you. You know, and you just get to go, ah, crap. You know, and and that way, I don't have to.
That explains a lot because it's always a little weird when I get up like in the morning and I check my email at like 8 a.m. and it's like email from Rick Emerson, and I look at it and it's timestamped like 3:45.
Well, I don't do that so you can't respond.
No, but I also just go, why is he sending emails at 4 o'clock in the morning? But it also means you could have written it earlier and then it was just sitting in the batch. You weren't just thinking about my thing at 3:30 in the morning.
No, I was thinking about your thing at 3:40 in the morning. I'm saying I should do the thing putting them all in a hopper and sending them. No, I don't do that. That's what I'm saying. I should actually throughout the day answer emails, but just let them pile up in the outbox. And then the last thing before I go to bed at like, you know, 3, I just like hit the thing and then they all send. Yeah. No. If you get an email from me at 3:45 in the morning, it's because I was awake at 3:45 in the morning. I'm a night person anyway, but I am also just an insomniac. So I will be dead tired. I'll go to bed at 2, you know, or 1 or midnight or 3 or whatever. And I'll just wake up 2 hours later and just clearly, like, I'm awake. And it's not like I'm awake for a moment. Like, I'm awake and clearly I'm staying awake. And so if I'm going to be awake, what am I going to – you know, I might as well just be productive. So if you get something from me at 4 a.m., it's because, like, I'm up answering stuff at 4 a.m. because my brain has decided not to let me sleep again. We're getting very behind. So we should do a few things here. Greg and Sarah are going to be in this afternoon. Somebody – I'll answer this question not via email. I'll answer this on the air here so people feel special. What is the name of the voice recognition software? The voice recognition software that I use is called Max Speech Dictate, but it is now renamed. So I'm calling it that out of habit, I guess. It has been called for many, many years Max Speech Dictate, but it is now just called Dragon Dictate for Mac. And so it's sort of an embarrassing kind of a name now, but because it makes it sound like you're sort of – makes it sound like a thing you're wielding in the pursuit of maiden's fair. It is called Dragon Dictate, just like it sounds, D-R-A-G-O-N Dictate, formerly known as Mac Speech Dictate, depending on where you shop for it. So Dragon Dictate.
And I use the Dragon Dictation. I haven't finessed it quite yet, but Patrick –
For your iPhone?
Yeah. Patrick was kind of impressed with me a couple of weeks ago when I used it for something where I was thinking about something and I wanted to make sure that I remembered to do something or something. And so I just, you know, hit the drag and then talked into my phone and then punched the button and emailed it to myself. And he's going, what did you just do there?
It's like scary good. It's
and I was like, I wanted to remember this. So I just said that so that I said – and I'm explaining to it. And then it, you know, it's voice recognition. Then it turns into an email and then it emails it to me, and so later I'll remember to do the thing. And he's like, okay, that's just weird.
It's creepy. It's like – that Dragon Dictate software is creepy smart. I mean, especially the app for the iPhone, which is free.
Yeah.
That's the freaky thing about that is that it's free, and it just like – I mean, and you can just talk normally, and it has like a 90% recognition rate like out of the box. I mean, it's just – it's completely – and it just – and the fact that it just recognizes things that it shouldn't recognize and names and Boutros Ghali and – so it's all very weird. Hey, speaking of science and technology, we should say that today's – didn't I just say earlier that I wasn't going to turn this into a whole, like, navel-gazing existential program about my own, you know, whatever? And so here – now we've just done that.
No.
All right. Well, in any event – because you said earlier, do you want to talk about it? And I'm like –
it's 2 days running for me, though, so it's fine.
Nothing to talk about. I'm fine. I'm just a little tired, which I guess is still true, but then I'm just – I got all this email and then all the horror of it. Anyway, today's discussion of science and technology and time and the inflexible nature of same brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or calling 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, well, let's be honest. If it has to do with any of those things, it's probably beyond your ken, as they say, because it's beyond mine. And I mean, unless you are an electrician, I'll just put it this way. Unless you are an electrician or like you have some freakish savant-like ability with things of that nature, you don't know how it works. You may have a vague idea. You may sort of have like a kind of a passable understanding. It's not like an actual understanding. And having a passable understanding of how electricity works, that's not like having a passable understanding of, like, you know, how to make pancakes. I mean, it's just because the relative downsides are not the same. So don't screw with that. You just call Squires Electric. It's 503-252-1609, 503-252 1609, or you can call Squires, or you can rather go online to SquiresElectric.com, their website. You can find out how to come, how to have them come to your home or business, and inspect whatever it is that might need inspecting, whether it's a home you're looking at buying or something you're looking at renting out or selling to other people, or maybe a business that you have moved into your home or you're expanding to a second or third location. You want to make sure that whatever property you're looking at renting or leasing or selling or buying or sharing, it's actually going to be suitable for your purposes. You don't want to move into there and you think you get all the costs taken care of. You got your deposit, you got your first and last, and you got your cleaning deposit, and you got your other deposit, and you got, you know, whatever other licenses you may have to have from the city, and your business license, and all of the equipment. And then you get in there and you find out that you just don't have enough power outlets. And then, and then it's a thing of, like, are you going to run electrical extender cables everywhere, or are we actually going to have it taken care of? You want to know all that stuff before you get in there. You call Squires Electric at 503-252-1609, or go to SquiresElectric.com. That is SquiresElectric.com. to find out more. Let's go back to the news desk, and then we'll do our Justified recap here in just a few. Here is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
I have two stories here that came to me via listeners. The first one from listener Caleb. A Rockford, Illinois woman.
Caleb in Florida?
I believe so. All right. A Rockford, Illinois woman with no arms is suing McDonald's, claiming that employees refused to serve her food because she has no arms and was too, quote, disgusting to serve. She says McDonald's offered her a $10 gift certificate as compensation. Her name is Dawn Larson. She was born with Holt-Oram syndrome, a genetic disorder which causes abnormalities in the hands, arms, and heart. Her tiny hands are about 6 inches from her shoulders, so she does most things with her feet. She said her disabilities never stopped her from leading a normal life. She says, I do everyday things like everyday people. But on November 3rd, she pulled up to the McDonald's drive-thru and ordered food for herself and her sons. She drove to the first window, gave the cashier her credit card with her foot, then pulled up to get her food. Dawn says, the first girl says, girl, you ain't got no arms. And the manager said she couldn't hand me her food, and she just kept sticking to the fact that I didn't have no arms, and she was disgusted by it.
Was she worried that maybe the woman was unaware that she'd left her arms at home? Like, it's like when you got a soda on the roof of your car or something. And then, girl, your soda's on the roof of your car.
Girl, you ain't got no arms.
Oh, my God. You know what's funny is when you started this story, immediately I had the whole, like, Lieutenant Dan, you ain't got no legs thing.
Mm.
And I thought, well, I don't want to make that joke out loud because that's just stupid and predictable. And I don't have to because it's contained in the story.
So, yeah, so she complained to McDonald's and they offered her a $10 gift certificate. And she said, you know, that's not good enough. And so now she's suing them.
I am intrigued by the fact that she drove, though. So is that a thing where she drives with her feet, do you suppose?
Probably,
yeah. Or I guess if the steering wheel's not that far away, so maybe you could just lean forward a little bit.
Yeah. And they also have there are the things you can do some stuff with your mouth and with some kinds of cars. You can, like, actually blow and steer and stuff. So I don't know.
I'm wondering if we are at a point where you could have, like, a voice recognition car. We were just talking about the Dragon Dictating, where you could have a thing of, like, you know, stop, left, right, or whatever. So, girl, you ain't got no arms.
Girl, you ain't got no arms.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay. And then let me find this other thing. This would be a Geek Watch.
All right. By the way, it's a point of pride with me that if on those occasions when I come across somebody that has some, you know, is put together oddly, let's say, that I don't react to it. Just like you would take pride in not seeming starstruck with celebrities. I try to never be wigged out or horrified or grossed out by anybody who's, like, you know, like, missing their face or something. Like, if somebody comes up and they got, like, an ear in the middle of their forehead or whatever, or they're just, you know.
Yeah, I see that all the time.
Or they're just leaking everywhere. I just, you know, and hello, sir, how can I help you today? You know, I just try to be very, very, like, you know, straightforward everything. Here's your Geek Watch for Thursday.
Ugh, this high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember, you used to
just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but because we were wondering if the quantum flux, and I just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Here is Don Taylor with your Geek Watch.
Hobo with a Shotgun, the outrageously bloody movie spawned by the gritty Grindhouse trailer, is about to blast its way into iOS devices in the form of a retro-style game with a unique backstory. The trailer and screenshots have debuted exclusively on Wired.com, offering a first look at the side-scrolling game, which will be coming to iPad, iPhone, and iPad Touch. It was partially created by Tim League, who is the owner of Austin's Alamo Draft House. And he says, "You are the grizzly hobo with a shotgun. When you run out of ammo, you just have to bludgeon people with your shotgun."
Awesome.
It's done up in 16-bit NES-style graphics that give the game an old-school vibe. The project could point the way towards future fertile collaborations between indie filmmakers and game developers. The game resulted from a partnership with Eisner, the filmmaker, indie game makers, Perfect Dork Studios and Powerhouse Animation, and Mondo, which is the collectible art boutique run by Tim League at the Alamo Drafthouse. And this all came about because they were talking about it at Fantastic Fest this last year, which happens every September, and it's at the Alamo Drafthouse. And Tim League said, "We wanted to see the indie game world and the indie film world fused together." And so they decided to do a retro NES-style game for Hobo with a Shotgun.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
Excellent. And when does that come out, the actual film?
That I'm not sure. It's screening at South by Southwest this year, and South by Southwest is starting like tomorrow.
Awesome.
So it will probably be released, I guess, sometime in the next few months.
I'm such a nerd. I went online and I downloaded the score for that because I forget the guy's name, but the guy who did the guy who did all the music for it did what Reznor Ross did for Social Network. He made the first half of the score downloadable at his website, just regular non-DRM'd MP3s. And he's like, "Hey, you know, here's the score. If you like it, you know, buy the rest on iTunes or whatever." And it's really good. So I've been listening at home. I've got this loop going right now because I, like a lot of people, you know, I work to music, but I typically work, not always, but I typically work to instrumental stuff. Sometimes if I work to lyrics, it's got to be something that I know so well that my mind isn't stopping and like going, "What are those lyrics?" So I typically work to instrumentals or to stuff that I've listened to for years. But right now I've got this loop at home going. My instrumental work loop is Tron Legacy, Social Network, and Hobo with a Shotgun, all just sort of like in a mix. So it's weird because it'll be like this weird sort of like very like mellow, like ambient, like down tempo, and then just sort of a like 70s retro thing, and then it cuts to like the Tron thing, which is all just a lot of beeping and blinking, and you know, and what's his name Flynn going, "Then I found a way to the grid," and it's all like very strange.
About the game, it's going to be $2.99. It's been submitted to Apple and could be available as early as the end of this week.
Yeah.
But it's Apple, so you don't know when they're going to, like, give the approval for it. Tim League does say about it, "Everybody dies a bloody death, but it's a 16-bit old-school death, so nobody's going to have any nightmares over it."
Rick Emerson does need something to do on the airplane on the way to New York, so.
And as for the movie that says it's actually going to be available video on demand April 1st and will be released theatrically in May.
I like what we're saying. Awesome. There you go. There's your Geek Watch for
I grab Thor's hammer. By the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
I know I've said this 9 million times, but there is no better line reading in cinematic history than when Alan Rickman just says next. That's the best word that's ever been uttered on film anywhere ever. Before we do the Justified recap, which we'll have to keep a little bit on the brief side today, I'm going to give clue number 4 for this week's Name That Snack contest, courtesy of EH Vending. If you are unhappy with your current vendor, if your current vendor is a jackass or a horrible human being, or if he fills you with a loathsome sort of hatred of the
Bastardo,
of the deepest kind of variety, really, just tell that guy just to suck it, just to eat a full bag, to suck it long and hard, and that you're moving elsewhere. And by elsewhere, we mean to EH Vending. That is ehvending.com. That's their website. Or you can call them in Portland, 503-897-8204. Or 360-816-1853 in Vancouver. And whether it's a soda machine, or your traditional snack machine, or your coffee service, or single door, or double door, triple door coolers or refrigerators. You can buy or you can rent as well. So if you just want to have it outright, you want to own it so your business is taken care of, you can do that. If you want to have at least, you want to take care of so they got the maintenance taken care of, and so they're out there and they're stocking it and making sure that everything is running every single day, they'll handle that as well. And for less than you might expect, and probably for less than whatever you are paying now. That is all you know and all you need know. So if you were looking to save a little bit of money, you want to contact EH Vending for all your vending needs. Don't forget, tomorrow we give out clue number 5 for this week's Name That Snack contest. If you are the first person to correctly identify this week's snack once that clue is given out via snack at rickemerson.com, you'll win a large bag of consumable goodness from EH Vending. Today's clue is paddywhack. There you go. That is today's clue. Paddywhack. I have no way to end this segment, so I'll just say, all right. Let's talk about last night's episode of Justified, which was freaking awesome, of course, because it was Goggins-centric.
It was. And it was a good episode.
It was really, really good.
I think it was the best one this season so far. And, oh, my God, Mags Bennett.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
How great and terrifying and wonderful and weird and just incredible is she? Yeah.
She is a wonderful character, but, oh, my God. I don't even know what to say about this episode. There was just so much in it that was really good. We finally got a chance to understand, you know, a little bit of where Goggins is coming from, where Boy Crowder's his head is right now, which is not entirely on the straight and narrow, but also not going to jeopardize anything that he's earned so far.
Well, he's, you know, and again, you noted that he's such a layered character in that you're never entirely sure whether, and not just in general, but with any specific statement that comes out of his mouth, whether it is true or false or a mixture of both, or whether he's trying to hew the straight and narrow but failing to do so, or whether he is trying, or if it's the opposite, if he actually still is a criminal at heart but is unable to really give it his all because he's being pulled toward the good, or if he himself is just shifting alliances and allegiances in his head from moment to moment. You just never know what he's up to, and in a way that could be very, very that could seem just contrived, and it really doesn't. Yeah. Last night was, I mean, and there was goddamn, and there's a, As much as he's sort of irritating, and I forget the character's name, but when the episode starts, the idiot that's in jail, Dewey Crow, where he's, well, these are hard times for Dewey Crow. That guy, he's just such a boob and just such a maroon. But I got to tell you, the interaction between him and Raylan is just fantastic. Yeah. I mean, that is just some of the best chemistry on that show, because it's just because he's so ambitious and energetic and just so colossally stupid on top of it, and he has that sort of horrible, revolting charm in a strange, like, dumb puppy kind of way, where Raylan just obviously can't just, you know, he has to take him kind of seriously because the guy, you know, might know what he wants to know, or he mixes it up with a bad crowd. But at the same time, it's like you can tell that even Raylan just realizes the guy is just such a zero, is just such a nothing. And there's that weird sort of strange affection that's almost underneath the surface when Raylan interacts with him, when Oliphant and he have scenes together. So
I'm really also looking forward to seeing where the storyline goes with the girl whose father was killed by the Bennetts and who has now been taken under their wing. Because as much as I'm not a fan of the overly mannered, too smart dialogue being put in the mouth of the kid. I think that was a little bit overdone. I still really like the scene with her and Timothy Oliphant, with him just sitting there and just saying, well, I kicked over a hornet's nest and no idea what's going to happen. I just want to let you know.
Well, and
he gives her a phone, and it's just like, you know, call me.
I was thinking about that last night, actually, because there's that they do that thing. And to be fair, I'm a little bit of a hypocrite with this, because I find I like it on Justified, or I'll tolerate it anyway, but I find fault with the Coen brothers a lot when they do it, because with the Coens it always feels a little one shade too forced, where there's the idiot with the $9 words.
Yeah.
And that's a thing that it always rings a little false when they do it, and I guess maybe it rings false on Justified too, but I don't know. There's something about it that I can. It doesn't bother me quite
as
much.
It's less campy.
Maybe.
And I'm a huge Coen brothers fan, but they do have a tendency to sidle too far into camp, I think, sometimes.
Because the thing with Justified is, like, as opposed to Kitsch, they almost played as like a Southern Gothic.
Mm-hmm.
It's like hillbilly Gothic almost in a weird way. But, you know, and You know, and the thing about it is, we were talking about Dewey Crowe and how there are hard times for him, but it's like everybody has their own like circle of hell on that show, like their own. I don't know, just their own past or their own circle of like idiotic relatives or kinfolk that are there, and it's like everybody on Justified is just trying to make like put one foot in front of the other every day, despite the fact that they are thwarted by their own impulses or weaknesses, or more frequently, just idiots around them.
Yeah. Oh my God, Raylan's father.
I mean,
every. God, well, when you talk about having a cross to bear, having that man as a dad.
And when you think he's run out of ways to be a dick or just to be horrible, and it's like, and the dynamic between Raylan and his dad and then the stepmom, because she's the stepmom, yeah. Right, is that is so interesting and that you can never really tell, like you can never really get a sense for what side she's on, and it's probably because she isn't on any side. She has that same thing that people have in real life, where her loyalties are divided, and her recognition of the fact that she's with a guy who's just the wrong guy in like 100 ways is sort of mixed together with the fact that, like, but she is with that guy.
Well, it's like Ava and Boyd.
Yeah.
And her explaining to Raylan, it's like, well, think of him what you will. Unfortunately, he's the only family I've got.
Right, right. And, you know, and that's you know, not a thing that is reflected really in my own life. Because I figure if somebody's a boob, I just, you know, opt not to be around them. But I realize that is, but most people don't act that way. Most people stick by their family and they stick by their relations or whatever, like, regardless of how bad that may be for their own personal circumstance. So this is episode 5. So what's good is we're not even halfway through the season yet. And there's clearly much more.
And it has reached, like you said, it's reached an interesting place where you can see parallels among the dynamics of all of the characters and all of their particular communities and families, even whether they're on the right or the wrong side of the law, or in the case of Goggins, we don't even know what he's up to yet. But it is, I think it is really fascinating to watch, because I don't think I've ever seen a show that's really done that before, where you're watching, you know, the interaction with the Bennets, but you also see Raylan with his father,
right?
And you know Ava with Boyd, and it just keeps sort of, you know, rippling outwards. That, like you said, everybody's got their stuff they got to deal with. Their circle of boobs,
yeah,
that around them that are keeping you down. And in the case of Mags Bennett, you know, if one of her sons is too much of a boob, she'll just break his fingers with a hammer.
God damn. I mean,
and then he will cry and say, "I'm sorry, Mama, I love you."
And it's, well, that's
God, like, that was creepy.
And it's like in that opening sequence when Raylan shows up and the guy's just out there with the bong, you know? And it's like, and you just think to yourself, like, God, what a load that guy is. And, you know, and then, yeah, and then you look at Mags and you're just like, well, why does she, you know, why does she even keep these guys around other than the fact that they're just stooges that'll do whatever she says? But even then, it's like, they do it badly,
yeah.
And so she'd be better off like hiring. She'd be hiring, but better off just getting like a truckload of Guatemalans to come be her henchmen. But the thing is, it's the whole family deal, yeah. And so she keeps them because they're family.
But even she knows, you know, what she's saddled with. But the fact that she put the 14-year-old girl, who's not even related to them, in charge of the store while she was gone, and he comes, Cougar or whatever his name is, he comes walking, he's like, "Mom never put me in charge of the store." Like, well, no wonder.
Yeah.
Like, really? You're wondering about that, are you?
Justified, which you really ought to be watching, that airs Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. On FX, ladies and gentlefolk. All right. We're going to wrap this up. Don't forget, tomorrow we'll be joined by one Mr. James Willig, Big Jim Willig, tomorrow for another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Tomorrow, talking about the life, work, and legacy of Eddie Izzard.
Woo!
So that'll, and that is all true. So that'll be tomorrow. That is Big Jim Willig tomorrow for Humor Me Comedy 101. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of the day's Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program, which comes to you live from the studios of the Emerson News Network each and every weekday, following Legion of News. Again, Legion of News, noon to one, followed by a tune or two, followed by this program. It'll be the same again tomorrow, starting at 12 at Cascadia.fm, right here at RickEmersonShow.com. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all, so keep spreading the word. That never goes unappreciated. It is Thursday, March 10th, 2011, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. Thank you for listening. Be safe. See you tomorrow. Bye now.